Good morning and welcome to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and pleasant ride in this morning, Bob. Was it not? Didn't you like that cool, crisp air? I thought it felt really pleasant.
It felt fantastic. You know, absolutely fantastic. I don't think it's going to be a great day. And it's been overall, I know it's warm, but it's been a pretty good week overall temperature wise. I mean, we are in the middle of summer, so, you know, but today high of 88, right around there, but right now 66 degrees. And honestly, I thought it felt a little cooler than that.
I did too. Felt great. Had the windows down on my way in. It was very, very pleasant. It's going to warm up a little bit, but I'll take it. Next week, we're supposed to have another little cool down.
Yep.
And let's move forward.
Hopefully,
and it's August. What do you think about that? It's August already.
It's just really hard to believe that it's already August. So, you know, speaking of that, how'd you enjoy your day off last Saturday?
You can't look at me with a straight face, can you?
I cannot wait for everybody. You have to go to our Facebook page. It's going to be posted really soon.
I'm happy as a lark. I had to take off last week. I got the pedicure that you were telling everybody.
And hair extensions.
Yeah, hair extensions. They could only do the back, so I got this little mullet look going on.
You look really good with your hair extensions.
Blonde. I decided to go blonde.
Yeah, I think it looks great. So there's a picture coming. Please get to Facebook. So, and I appreciate those who went into his store and asked how his hair extensions and pedicure was. I didn't know if anybody caught that when I was joking last week.
It's all good. I needed a little bit of pampering, and so, I got it.
But no, we missed you last week. We enjoyed our show. We had a great time. We had Scott Maddox in from Maddox Garden Center and Landscaping, and we had Jason from Herman Services. And
you sounded good. I listened to a bit of it. And I just took my leisurely time last Saturday morning getting ready to go into work, couple cups of coffee, and just I was listening to you guys off and on as I was walking through the rooms.
It's nice not getting up at 3 o'clock in the morning, isn't it?
It's incredibly nice. You have no idea. You'll know next week. Yeah, you'll know next week.
Yes. So yeah, you're gonna be manning it, and you know, you'll have some guests in and should be a good time. But, you know, there was so many things last week we talked about. And this show, I want to get your take on some of those once we get it, you know, kind of get going here a little bit. But, you know, I know you answered some of those questions about the tomatoes. You know, we were talking about blossom.
Oh, that was the calcium deal. Yeah.
Yep. So we talked a lot about that. And I know you answered her question, but, you know, we talked about it on the radio. And I think a lot of people are seeing some of those issues. Fall webworm, we talked about.
Yeah.
You know, I think you'd mentioned you're seeing some of that around here as well.
I've seen a little bit. A little early, premature somewhat, but hey, you can't predict when this kind of things are going to take place. But the fall webworm, that's, you know, it's a lot like the eastern tent caterpillar, which you see earlier in the spring, and usually happens, you know, where the branches meet the trunk of the tree, typically down in the crotches for the most part. But the fall webworm, I'll spit that out. The fall webworm you typically see out on the ends of the branches.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, you guys covered it pretty well.
Yeah. And, you know, what I found was very interesting was the fact that, you know, the further north you go, obviously it's cooler, so they're behind. But, you know, they actually tell you that longitude 40, which kind of cuts through Columbus, so anywhere Columbus south tends to get it quite a bit earlier than our friends to the north. So I just found that very interesting, and now that I'm driving around, and even this week, I noticed more of it. When you'd see it on the roads, you could look up because the webs are so large, you can see it driving down the road at 45 mile an hour.
And you know what? You just brought up something very, very interesting. And when we talk about various things like the fall webworm, you know, coming about and occurring, or maybe bagworms or what have you, a lot of times, you know, we can't tell people when these things are going to occur by calendar date. It's all done really by growing degree days. You're taking the average, you know, you're taking the high and the low, and you're averaging that out over time. And because we've warmed up quicker, those things come about sooner. So you just cannot follow things by the calendar date.
No. And you know, with our temperatures this year, my goodness, everything's kind of was all out of whack with the wet spring that we had. It just really kind of made the plants, you know, slow to come out. I'm still seeing certain hydrangeas. Seems like they're a little bit behind. Some of the other ones, like Little Lime, Quick Fire, Little Quick, you know, the newer varieties, they seem to be kind of on time. but
they usually are.
There's a few, like my In the Summer at my house.
Mm-hmm.
They're a little bit behind, just a little bit.
You know, we've had that discussion several times, and I think that's all about the location of where those plants are in the landscape. I really do. You know, if you have those plants on the northern side of the home, and even sometimes in situations, even the eastern side of the home where you're getting that morning sun, a lot of times I don't think that's quite enough. You know, when you have to cut those plants back hard because of a cold winter, I don't think that's enough time. And then when you do, in fact, see some bud development and some blooms, it's really, really late in the season.
Yeah, it really is. And even mine, which is a full western exposure, it's hot. But I noticed kind of going in, doing a little examination, everything came back from the base. Nothing mm-hmm. came back from last year's growth. And I think that also kind of takes its toll on some of those flowers. So last year this happened as well. And about Labor Day is when I really noticed the big round of its first big mm-hmm. round of blooms.
Right.
There's a bloom here, there's a bloom there. But the big round didn't happen until late in the season. And I'm kind of anticipating that again because my I think I got a strawberry sundae about maybe 20 feet from it. Man, it's going like gangbusters right now.
Oh, if it's western exposure, it should be. You know, going back to the macrophyllas, you know, you're talking about the big leaf hydrangeas, and you just saying, you know, you cut it back, it came back from the ground. You know, do you think that maybe they aren't as cold tolerant and we need to add a little bit of protection to them during the winter months?
It sure wouldn't hurt. If you have sensitive plants, I think it could make a difference. I've just been leaving mine for 15, 16 years now, and they do consistently bloom. Some years are always better than others. If you want blooms out of a hydrangea, though, I really think switching to some of those other varieties, like Little Lime.
The paniculatus.
Paniculatus,
right.
the ones. And they also handle the sun so much better. The only thing is, occasionally, you got to make sure you keep enough moisture on them during the summer to get the good change of color in the flower, as opposed to just turning to brown.
Yeah, if you let them dry out, you know, the foliage will look a little ratty too on a paniculatus. So keep that in mind. You know, everything needs adequate moisture in a timely fashion. You know, here's what I like to see you do with your Endless Summer. This winter, if you would put some sort of a barrier around it and maybe just loosely just put straw in there or shred up some leaves a little bit and protect it.
Yeah, we can put something around it and try it.
See if that doesn't change the game for that your Endless Summer. I would just be curious to see if, you know, you put up a windbreak of some sort, a little bit of winter protection, if that might help promote a little bit earlier blooming activity the following season.
It would be good to experiment and try. You know, and last week our plant of the week was Bloomstruck.
That's a great one.
It's a new one. And I want to plant some of those just to see if they're a little bit hardier than the original Endless Summer, and just see with, you know, the Endless Summer came out 10 years ago or plus, somewhere around there. But whenever it came out, you know, in 10 years, things have gotten better. Everything's improved.
You know, I would have to reference this. Bloomstruck was crossed between a couple of varieties, and one of those varieties it was crossed with, I think it took on the characteristic of having that dark-colored stem.
Mm-hmm.
And very attractive. I have found it and heard people talking about Bloomstruck as being very reliable. So, you know, things change in the hydrangea world. Guys, there are so many different varieties. And we saw that up at Cultivate a couple of weeks ago. There, you know, I'm really getting into the Seaside Serenade hydrangea series that Monrovia has put out. And it's relatively new, some of these varieties. We might touch on them a little bit later in the program. But I love hydrangeas. I know a lot of other people do, but I know also, Bob, there's a lot of frustration out there. Like, why don't mine bloom? What's the problem? What's going on? And I'm here to tell you, they need some sun, although a lot of people preach, that's a great shade plant. You need some sun.
I agree they need sun. Are you hearing in your store anything about the quick fire, little quick, little lime, any of those not blooming Bobo? I'm not having people complain about those.
You know what? I have heard people mention that they thought their Bobos really weren't as prolific of a bloomer as other people that I've heard talk about them.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a good friend of mine, Mike Linehan, he has some Bobos. And we were just talking about this the other day when we were golfing. And I said, I've had people kind of, you know, just kind of talk them down a little bit. And he goes, what for? He said, mine are beautiful. So you know, I think maybe some of those people really do not have them in an area where they get enough sun.
I think that's key. Also, you look online, and there's a few pictures of Bobo hydrangeas out there online, and you see the amount of bloom on that particular plant. And let's face it, we can crop, change, add, manipulate photos. And the company that took that photo has been known to do that occasionally.
Ooh, I've not heard that one. That's interesting.
So where, you know, they'll take cuttings from other ones, stick it down in the plant, take the photo so it looks like it blooms heavier.
Sure.
So, you know, I think we have some unrealistic expectations of sometimes what it does. But I can tell you, it seems like Bobo, Strawberry Sunday, Little Lime, Quick Fire, Little Quick, those newer varieties, honestly, I've got, everyone I've got is an incredible bloomer.
Well, hold on to that thought. We'll talk more about that when we come out of the break. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Barr. Join us. Give us a shout. 749-B105, anything you want to talk about in your landscape, and we'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Barr. It's good to be back in the studio, but it's also nice to be out some weekends as well. And I was out last week, and kind of a little chipper and giddy this morning. I had well-rested, so to speak. But we have a great show lined up for you. And also, 8 o'clock hour, we want to remind you that our good friends from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing will be in to join us. And I believe that is Ryan Julian and Andy Caudill. And if you're having some issues with your air conditioning unit, you might want to tune in at the 8 o'clock hour and talk to these guys, because nothing more, or I shouldn't say nothing worse than being stuck inside, and it's hot, and humid, and you can't sleep. You have to be comfortable. And they're all about creating a comfortable home environment inside. So Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing will be with us at 8 o'clock. Also, check out our Facebook page. There's an interesting plant out there. What plant am I? If you notice, when you touch it, it's a little sensitive. We'll talk about that later in the program today.
There's a big clue.
There's a big clue right there, if you get it. And also, Bob, won't you just kind of lead up into what our plant of the week is. You remember that?
I do remember what it is, but, you know,
we'll
if I do
that.
It, then, you know, we're talking about this trifecta of problems and solutions, what plant am I, and plant of the week. But, you know, with our trifecta going on, I don't know if we should give people
okay,
a clue.
We'll hold off on that. And also, a great way to stay in touch with us is our Facebook page. We'll talk about some of the Facebook questions that we received recently. Also, you can email us in and around the house at b105.com. Also, check out a past show with the podcast. Alex, you keeping that up to date?
Yes, sir.
All right, so I like.
And they got to get to Facebook. They got to see your hair extensions. Please get out there. Share that with everybody so you can see how pretty Tony looks in blonde hair extensions. It just looks great.
I like changing it up. You know?
How's that pedicure? Does it feel good?
Yeah, I do that. I get one monthly. And, you know, and a manicure, too. I go out to Dillard's all the time, monthly.
There you go.
It's what my wife buys me for Christmas every year.
So, but before we went to break, we were talking about hydrangeas, because it was such a big topic last week. And I think the month of August, it's just hydrangea showtime. You know, it's just everything in the garden center with hydrangeas that we have are just outstanding. Again, vanilla strawberry, strawberry sundae, Bobo, little lime, lime light. You know, Quick Fire, you know, all that. I mean, they're just an incredible showcase right now. Summer Crush is another one that I absolutely love.
That one really impressed me when I saw it up at Lakeview Nursery. It was a few weeks ago. Gosh, I love the color in Summer Crush.
Yep. And what I love about Summer Crush and also about Bloomstruck is, and here we go, your favorite word, the verticality of the plant. It's a stiffer branch. It tends to stay more upright, where certain hydrangeas can sometimes fall over. And I think that's what I like about Little Lime and Bloomstruck. And they just tend to stay tidy. And I think that's where the hydrangeas has improved over the last 5 years. They're coming where they're a little bit smaller plants, a little bit more compact. Mm-hmm. And that's keeping them fuller, thicker, and nicer looking. Not that I don't love, like, the old-fashioned oak leaf hydrangeas.
Right.
But sometimes those can fall over when they get real heavy.
Yeah, it's a little, when you see the flappiness of some plants, mm-hmm. you know, and you feel like you have to stake them up all the time, that's not fun to do.
No.
And, you know, inevitably sometimes we have to do that. But, you know, going back to Bloomstruck, I think, you know, getting around that 4-foot height range with Bloomstruck is adequate, and where it's not too big or it's too small. Mm-hmm. So I think it really has its place. It was crossed between Twist and Shout and another hydrangea. I was trying to find that one out, but at some point I will.
Yeah.
But it's amazing how they can come up with these different hybridized varieties. There are so many. It's becoming more and more confusing.
It's becoming confusing, but it also is great for the consumer because you get so much variety. Now, if you want to find the mix of purples, blues, and pinks, or if you want to find pink, or if you want to find white, there's so many colors out there. And because the flower is really consistent on some of these newer varieties, you can plant it and then have the expectations of a good bloom cycle year after year after year, as opposed to 10 years ago when we had Nico Blue and some of these other varieties where I bet almost every day somebody was coming in saying, why aren't my hydrangeas blooming? Why aren't my hydrangeas blooming? And that question of why aren't they blooming is still out there, but it's not as much as it used to be because the varieties are better.
My poor mom, she had an Nico Blue, and it was a huge hydrangea, beautiful hydrangea. And, you know, she would put the coffee grounds on it and all that stuff. And there were some years, you know, I could just see, you know, her heart broken, so to speak. It just would not bloom because the winter was so severe. All the bloom buds froze out.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, when Nico Blue, when she bloomed, my gosh, I mean, she made a statement. Yeah. And you still see Nico Blues out there, but most of us in the nursery industry, we don't really invest in them.
Well, there's no reason to anymore with all the endless summer series, and you can get all the color out of those, and they're a much more consistent bloomer. But still, even the original endless summer occasionally will not have a great year, and it usually is followed by a very hard winter. And we've had two in a row, so I haven't quite had the bloom production on the endless summer that I'm used to.
Mm-hmm.
And even this year, again, the plant looks great, healthy as can be, 3.5 foot tall. Beautiful plants.
But that's why I want you this year to use chicken wire or some sort of hardware mesh and encircle that plant. Use a little bit of loose straw in there or some shredded loose leaves. And let's see if she doesn't bloom earlier or come on without any winter damage.
Sure.
You know, because you said you had to go all the way back to the ground with her.
I went pretty close. I went about 6 inches off the ground. I butchered it, you know, but that's what it needed because it was all dead. It just was coming from the base, and you could look in there. I mean, the plant is incredible, but it's just not getting the bloom production.
You know, last but not least, let's conclude it on hydrangeas for a moment, but I want to ask you this one. What do you tell homeowners or customers when they come in and say, hey, what is all these markings or what's all this stuff that's on my oak leaf hydrangeas and, you know, some of the discolorations or some of the fungal issues? You know,
well,
a lot of
sometimes
leaf
you get
spot,
a leaf spot, right. you're getting some discoloration already where it seems like they're trying to get to fall. That's all heat stress. And it's a defense mechanism for the most part on a lot of those, I think, because it was so much moisture and then it just went so hot that they kind of went, "Ooh, wait a minute, this isn't a good thing." And I'm seeing that in some maples, too. If you look at some newly planted maples,
mm-hmm.
you know, that maybe aren't really good soil, they're doing the same thing. They're going to fall a little bit early. It's just a defense mechanism. I just tell people at this point, let the leaf spot happen. Let the blotch happen. There's a little fungus on there. Don't worry about
it. And usually, like on the oak leaves, you know, you see those little marks and so forth. That's Cercospora. It happens. Mm-hmm. It's not going to kill the plant. It's a little unsightly sometimes. But if you want to be on your game and if you want to do things like from a spraying fungicides prior to these things occurring, that helps keep some of that to a minimum. It doesn't always stop it totally. But you can certainly do that. So just keep that in mind. And you were talking about defense mechanism. Keep that in mind because we had a Facebook question about a service berry that somebody was having an issue with. And this was really interesting. So hang in there with us. We're going to talk about this when we come out of the break. 749-B105 in and around the house with Tony Works and Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and it looks like we have a pretty nice day in store for us. And hey, keep in mind too, down at Smale Park, I believe, is that right, Alex? Beer Fest?
Yes.
Ooh, who doesn't like a hot or cold beer on a good hot afternoon? I've been there, but don't drink too many. It'd make for a quick evening. And you don't want to turn it in too early. So check that out today. It's always a fun time. And while we went into the break there, Bob, our good friend Denny the Birdman just called in. Good morning, Denny. How are you?
I'm good. And yourself?
Doing well. How's summer treating you thus far?
So far, so good. I haven't been too hot or nothing like that. I've been able to stay cool in my happy house and stuff. So
that's good.
He's been talking to the ostriches, too.
I saw that photograph. That looked like the Liberty Mutual commercial there. Where were you?
Well,
yeah.
Well, it was at a place called the Wilds in eastern Ohio, just outside of Zanesville.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on a tour-hour tour. And we was at a wildlife safari. And it just so happened that the ostrich so happened to started talking to me, and I started talking to it. My daughter got a picture of it.
See,
later on, the ostrich kissed me. So,
see, you have this ability to connect to birds, right?
I guess, apparently, so, because, like I said, you know, everybody else was taking pictures of it and everything else, but he was actually squawking at me, and I was squawking back at him, and next thing I knew, he kissed me. So,
Interesting.
He must have thought you were a good-looking man, Denny.
I guess. I had fun with it, that's for sure. Everybody on the bus had a good time with it, that's for sure.
Well, that cracked me up when I saw it on Facebook. I absolutely was dying last week when I saw it. So
yeah,
made
I was
me,
hoping
made
you got
laugh.
The pictures and stuff. I couldn't listen last week because I was out and about, but you know, I was hoping you got the pictures and everything. So
We did.
And always, thanks for sharing things like that, Denny. It always it's a fun time and a good laugh when you see things like that. That's what the show's all about.
Yeah, you know, it just seems like me and the birds get along so well. You know, I just had to send it to you. So.
All right, I'm gonna put you on the spot. If you could come back at another point in time, another life, and you could be a bird, what bird would you be?
Probably an eagle.
There you go.
I love eagles. So.
All right. That would be a good one.
Or a hummingbird. I love the little hummingbirds, too. So.
Yeah, I do, too.
They always
one.
Seem to be having fun. So
There's one that hangs out on our back deck area, around the area, and he always perches up on the end of the feeder pole and watches the lantana, make sure that no other hummingbirds come around and steal his nectar. They're very protective, aren't they?
Yeah,
they're
territorial. The males especially.
Yeah, no, it's kind of fun.
I got one of
those
little hummingbird perches about two feet from my other feeder, and he sits there two or three times a day and just watches the feeder and chases everybody away.
Yeah, it's always a good time to watch the birds. Well, Denny, thanks for checking in on us, and you know, enjoy the rest of the summer. Stay in touch, and if anything comes up with you and any more wild bird encounters, let us know.
Oh, I will do. Will do. I'll be keep sending you pictures and stuff like that if things to come up. So,
all right, Denny.
I'll be in touch.
Thanks, hey, buddy. Have a good weekend.
Have a good summer.
I'm so glad I had the opportunity to meet him. It's just a great guy.
Oh,
down
to
earth.
The bird whisperer. He should be instead of Denny
the
bird man, the bird whisperer.
The bird whisperer. Yes.
That's what Denny should be called. I'm glad I think it's his daughter that sends us the pictures.
Yes,
so
it is.
We're thankful for that, too, because I did. As soon as I saw him talking to that ostrich, I just started laughing. I mean, I couldn't help it. I giggled for a little while on that.
That's good.
Made me smile.
That's what it's about.
You know, and speaking of birds and bees, you know, I sent you that picture, and I'm going to get Alex to put it up on our Facebook page as well, of that bumblebee inside that Rosa Sharon hibiscus this week.
Did you see all the pollen on him?
That's why I took it.
Yeah, I mean, he had to have a pollen buzz.
Yeah, and I took that with my phone, so I got really close. He didn't care that I was even near him, and he was so covered. And like I said, we'll post that up on Facebook. But, you know, this is why you got to plant some things for pollinators, because the bees just love it. And that bee was just covered in pollen, just covered.
It's almost like he's wearing a nice suit and went out and fell in a mud puddle.
Yeah, but he was happy about it.
Yeah, he was happy about it, but he only picked up pollen.
Yeah, that's
all
he had.
It was all over him.
Yeah,
that was a good photo, by the way.
So, yeah, we'll get that posted so people can see.
All right, Alex.
This is why.
Hop on it, will you?
I just sent it to you, Alex. You got it.
Get on it, Alex.
So,
We expect more and more from you every show. Get on it. But before we went into the break, we were kind of talking about defensive mechanisms. And one of those defensive mechanisms is some of our trees will do this. They have an uncanny ability to drop foliage when they're stressed. And they do that to reduce stress. We had a great question, you know, that was sent to us on our, you know, in our email. And that was Chris. And Chris was talking about a serviceberry that had dropped a lot of foliage this year. And usually a serviceberry, you don't hear that too often, do you, Bob? Because, I mean, they're native. They're pretty resilient. They can tolerate a lot of situations. They're not fussy about soil. And I kind of thought, ooh, this is really, really interesting. And I fired back with a couple of questions. One was, you know, with all the moisture that we had early in the spring and throughout the spring, actually, is it sitting in an area that stays wet, you know, especially after some of those hard rainfalls that we've been getting? Is it near a downspout? You know, what's its situation? And it's one of those things that you can't really tell what's going on. And as far as I'm concerned and what I know, I do not believe that the serviceberry is a short-lived specimen by any means.
No, not necessarily. It's a great tree. It'll tolerate wide range of pH soil conditions. But just looking at the pictures, waterlog is the first thing that kind of came to mind for me. Like it's just holding some moisture because there is two things that the serviceberry do not handle really well, and we had both of them. One was waterlogged roots and extreme dry.
Mm-hmm.
And we went from one to the other. And I think, my opinion is, it's hard to tell from the picture completely, but that's my opinion, that it looks like moisture issues. And then we went to that extreme heat, and this thing went, yeah, I'm not real happy about this. You know, and it sort of acted out.
And, you know, plants will let us know, believe it or not, and I say this kind of facetiously, but if you pay attention to your plants, they're really talking to us in many ways, and they'll let us know when they aren't happy. And going back to what you just said about this particular serviceberry, I'm looking at some of the foliage, and you can see these fungal issues right in the middle of the leaves itself, kind mm-hmm. of running almost, if I say this correctly, it looks almost like vertical, depending upon how the leaves are hanging. It may have very well been wet. She said it's been there for 15 years. It's 18 to 20 feet in height, so it's well established. And the first thing that came to mind, what I wanted Chris to do, I had mentioned, you know, take your fingernail or a pocket knife and select several branches and lightly scrape back the outer skin. And if you see green tissue underneath the outer skin, that is a good sign. And that sign tells me that there's life in those branches. It like I said, trees will drop foliage to protect themselves, to reduce stress. And what they're trying to do is, you know, just shut down a little bit and not need as much energy and exert less energy. So I think she's going to be okay. It's a wait and see. I think I guess it's a female when I say Chris.
Right.
But one thing I want to point out, last but not least, the photograph of the serviceberry, just if by chance anyone that has a serviceberry, this particular serviceberry is very thick. It's like a large shrub. Take the time to prune out some of those inner branches, especially those that cross inside. Open it up and make it look like a small multi-stemmed tree. And doing that makes it a very attractive specimen. But hang in there, Chris. I think a lot of it has to do, it's more environmental, and stay in touch with us. And that's a great way to stay in touch with us, by the way. So we're going to take another quick break. And if you have anything you want to talk about in the landscape, give us a shout, 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I am Tony Works, alongside here with Bob Bard. And we were just moments ago talking about stressed out plants. And if anything like that might be happening to you with something in your landscape, give us a shout if you want to talk about it. Because we're seeing a lot of interesting things occurring. And a lot of that has to do with environmental stress, things that were taking place earlier in the spring and during those torrential downpours that we've been experiencing. It seems like sometimes, Bob, it's not just that nice, gentle downpour. It's these gushers.
Right.
And where does the water go? A lot of times it runs off, but a lot of times, too, it pools in various areas. And when it pools and it stays there, and we have plant material, shrubs, perennials, and trees in those areas, that isn't good. And sometimes it spells issues, disaster with some plants.
And let's go back a little bit to that last segment. We were talking about the service berry that, you know, and, you know, there's a couple things that they don't like. But, you know, we had mentioned that leaves kind of, trees will kind of shed some leaves in the summer or if they're having stress issues. You know, I was talking about maples earlier and a lot of them already turning to fall. They just weren't happy with that wall of water and then the heat spell. What about evergreens? What about people who have evergreens? I mean, if they start losing needles, that's not a defense mechanism.
No, it's telling you something is seriously wrong.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen quite a bit of that, actually, too. As a matter of fact, there was a customer in a store yesterday, and she's experiencing some issues with a spruce tree. And as a matter of fact, ironically, it's a blue spruce. Quite large, and it was just relocated from one location to another location this past March.
Okay.
And she was telling me it's of size, and now it's the needles are turning brown and they're dropping. So, you know, I start kind of thinking rhizosphera, needle cast disease, and I told her, I said, do me a favor, you know, bring in some samples. I want to see the tips.
Mm-hmm.
I also want to see stuff, you know, inside and any needles that have fallen to the ground. And when I looked at some of the needles, you know, I was fortunate. A great Christmas gift for my wife was a microscope.
Mm-hmm.
And I use it all the time. And you get to see this different world up close. But what I was looking for were the tiny dots on the needles themselves, which is an indicator of rhizosphera needle cast disease, which I did not see. I didn't see evidence of spider mite activity either.
So, what color were the needles? Tan?
Yeah, they were like a, not really tan, they were brown.
But not like a reddish brown like needle case.
No,
like
no.
Like a pinkish, reddish tint.
It wasn't a deep color, and it did not have the tiny dots up you know, going along the mm-hmm. needle itself. So, you know, I don't know if this has a lot to do with it either. Did it dry out? Obviously, when you move a tree of that size, it's very difficult to get all the root system. And maybe it wasn't the best time to do it this year with all the rain that we had either.
How big was the tree?
I believe it was about 12 foot.
Oh, that's tough. Without a spade digger, like a big bobcat spade digger. I don't know how
this was all done and carried out.
Yeah.
It was carried out by a reputable landscape company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's all I can tell you. But it's really difficult to start diagnosing these issues.
Well, and if they did move it, and let's say they did it, they got a tree spade, one of the, you know, a professional tree spade where they actually dug the roots. And even in the spring with all the rain, it probably did really well. But the tree was also moved. And when it does need to be watered on a regular basis. And if they sat for the 19 days with no water after all the rain, that's probably your culprit right there.
But the good thing was you could see some new development out on the tips. So
she started watering.
I don't know. She said she was watering and she thought maybe it was too much and then she wasn't sure. You know, and this goes back to what we say all the time. If you're really not sure, just take a moment, pull back the mulch away from, you know, if it's a perennial plant or if it's an annual, if it's a shrub or if it's a tree, and take your index finger and try and stick it into the soil surface down 2 or 3 inches. That is the best instrument or tool to use to check for moisture. Mm-hmm. I mean, if it's moist, back off, leave it alone. Don't give it any more water. But if you can't penetrate that upper surface of the soil and detect there's some moisture there, then you need to give it a drink.
Right. Yeah, you absolutely do. And with the way things are still right now, there are pockets of the area that have had large amounts of rain. There are pockets of this tri-state area that have had none because these storms have been so random. There's places out on the east side, I think last week, where, you know, they were talking Brown County was under flood warning and we didn't get anything. You know, we got a sprinkle. You know, so they're very random. So you can't count necessarily even on the rains, because if they're coming, like Ron said, Ron Rothaus said, what, a couple weeks ago he was on, they got 4 inches in, you know, a short amount of time. You know, it was the heaviest rain since 1975 at one time in that short amount of time.
Right.
Well, that's coming down so hard, that's not soaking in. So, and the ground's really hard. I will say, with the timely rains we've had, the grass has done a little bit better. You know, in certain spots, those who have been watering are really in great shape.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, plants need water. If you've planted anything in the last 3 to 4 years and it's been this dry, grab the hose. You're not going to hurt it if you go out there and water it every so often. It's not going to hurt anything. If anything, it's going to help the trees.
Yeah, you need to do that. That's really important. And so these are some of those issues that have been cropping up as a result of, you know, maybe some of the rains we had this spring. So also on our Facebook page, we had an interesting question about chipmunks.
Mm, yeah, we did.
And you have any suggestions for Marjorie? I'll tell you in a moment what I suggested. But when it comes to chipmunks, do you have a preferred method of eradicating, getting rid of?
Besides the 22? No, I'm kidding. Don't shoot us here. No pun intended.
Maybe
there.
A 410.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, unfortunately, they've been a nuisance so far lately for some people this spring. You know, they're getting into the ground, creating some holes, which sounds fine, but you get around roots, start opening up, getting air direct to the roots. You know, there have been some issues with some small perennials. You know, I've heard people try mothballs. I've heard people try some of the repellents, but with very little success. Some have great success.
Mm-hmm.
It's been all over the board. You know, if you could still trap them, you know, I think that's something you put on Facebook was, you know, have a heart trap. That's probably still the best way. But, you know, you need to make sure you also move them into an area where you're allowed to.
Yeah, well, we'll talk more about that. We got to take another quick break. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Give us a call if you want to talk about anything in and around the house or the landscape, and we'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works, alongside here with Bob Bard, and we're rolling right along this morning, and we have a couple calls here on the line, and we're going to go right to those, and we have Dan with us this morning. Good morning, Dan. How are you?
Good morning. How are you?
Doing well.
So, I got an easy question and a hard question. Which one do you want to start with?
Start with the hard one.
Okay. My mother-in-law has 2 oak trees in her backyard, and the one oak tree on the north side, they're sitting side by side, but the one that faces north, on the right-hand side, it's starting to die. Like, the maybe bottom two-thirds of it now is dead. The left side looks fine. It's all bright and green and pretty. But the right side, you know, the leaves fell off, and they started falling off last year, and the limbs are dead. The limbs are starting to fall out. Do you know what that would be?
Boy, that's interesting. Let's go back real quick. And anything changed around those trees? Were there any sidewalks put in? Are these out in the front?
No, they're in the backyard.
They're in the backyard. Okay, so nothing's changed.
Okay. They've been there for probably 40 years or more.
Boy, I don't know. The only thing I know that's really kind of a weird situation going on with oak trees is this sudden oak death. And that is something that I don't know a great deal about, but I know there's been a lot of things brought up about this particular disease, and it was just really over in Indiana, especially, has come about in a bad way. And this is something what I would probably suggest that you do is contact an arborist to have somebody take a look at this and get their spin on it. Since you said it happened last year as well, that is why I would do that. There are various diseases that oak trees can, you know, endure or have issues with. And, you know, I don't know, Bob, what do you think?
Well, there's bacteria, there's fungal issues. Sometimes it's shock, you know, water changes, temperature. There's a lot of things that can really affect oak trees. And, you know, I think this is one that for us to diagnose is going to be very difficult. I would definitely call a licensed arborist. I would have them out as quick as I can, get this thing diagnosed, see if there's any way possible to treat it, you know, because start looking at some of the branches, see if there's any problems on those. You know, there's multiple issues. Just make sure also there's no, you know, sometimes lightning strikes can cause some weird issues on an oak tree.
Yeah. You know, I think you're driving, if I'm not mistaken. It sounds like you're in a car. But if you remember the Arbor Doctor, real easy, and that's Ron Rothaus.
Okay.
I would give the Arbor Doctor, that's Ron Rothaus, a call and just certainly have him take a look at that, because sounds like those oak trees have been around for some time, and if there's anything that we can do to protect them and keep that longevity element going, I would certainly do that, and it would be worth your while.
Okay, sounds good.
And what's your easy question?
So, I think I've heard you guys talk about giving flowers haircuts before.
Mm-hmm.
So I've got a bunch of vincas. Can I do that to them?
Yeah, absolutely.
And how much would you cut back?
Is this the vinca periwinkle?
Yes.
I would go down at least halfway, maybe, okay, you know, a little bit beyond that, and then give them a good fertilization, and they'll respond favorably.
Okay.
How are you cutting them back because they're big, or are you cutting back because there's an issue?
No, I'm cutting them back because they're out of control.
Yeah, just go ahead and cut them in half. Get some Jack's fertilizer, some general fertilizer would be great, 20-20-20 for those. Okay. Mix it with water, pour it on them when you're watering, and those things will recover probably. And if they're healthy and they're just overgrown, they'll probably recover in a couple weeks.
Okay. All right. That's it. Thank you.
Right. Thank you. Thanks for listening. Have a good day.
All right. Thanks. Bye.
Yeah, that's interesting. And we have Donna with us online, too. Good morning, Donna. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
We're doing well. Thank you.
I'm trying to figure out what a plant is called and where I can get one. The leaves are, I want to say, elongated, and they're like yellowish, reddish, orangish.
How tall is the plant?
Is it a shrub? Is it a plant?
It's a plant, I believe.
You think it's a tiger eye sumac?
Well, is this an outdoor plant or is it more of a house plant?
I think you could probably do both.
Where have you seen it?
I see them sometimes in the planters.
Oh, that's a croton, where it's all foliage and the leaves are different colors, yellow, reddish, green. It's a croton, C-R-O-T-O-N. And any of your locally independent garden centers typically carry those. We carry them all the time. It's a great plant, especially for full sun. And they can be used as an indoor house plant as well. But when you bring those indoors, you're going to treat them as such. Be careful with your watering because they do not like to stay wet. I have a couple down in my backyard, and they are spectacular.
Okay. So a croton.
Croton. Mm-hmm.
All right. And I have one more question.
Sure.
I have a Schefflera plant.
Mm-hmm.
It's been outside all summer so far, and it's doing very, very well. When I bring that in, is there anything I should do special for that or...
Absolutely. That's a great question. And we usually talk about this as we approach the time of year when you bring in, you know, some of those outdoor plants to winter them over inside. The first thing I would be more concerned about is are bringing in insects that are hitchhiking a ride.
Right.
And weeks before it's time to bring in our plants that have been outside, I would encourage you to use a couple of different products. One would be a granular insecticide that's a systemic. And it's easy to use, and it's based on the pot's diameter, and that's what determines how much of the product you put on the soil surface, and just scratch it in lightly. And every time you water, that product breaks down, and it gets into the plant via its root structure. It goes up into the plant and protects it. So if there's any insects, any sucking insects that are residing on that plant, the Schefflera, they will die and fall off.
Okay.
And then the other thing I would do, I would spray insecticidal soap on my plants underneath the foliage or on top or something other than that's gentle. And I would take both approaches. Then I would bring those inside. And then you'll back off of your fertilization. You'll back off some of your watering. When you're indoors, you don't have to do that as often as you do when you're outside.
Okay. And I know I sprayed it probably 3 to 4 weeks after I took it outside with the insecticidal soap.
Mm-hmm.
I had a problem with another plant, and I had called Ron up at Robbins.
Uh-huh.
and he told me to get that. So I sprayed it with that, and the leaves got real green again.
Good. That's perfect, and that's what you want to see. And that, and yeah, Ron Robbins is a good guy, and he knows what he's doing. So are you over in the Delhi area? Yeah, the next time you see Ron, tell him to get some hair extensions like I did last week. All right. Donna, have a great weekend. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirtz with Bob Bard. We have to take another quick break, and we'll talk more gardening when we come back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. If you're just joining us, welcome. And just sun starting to work its way up, and you're seeing a little bit of sunshine right now. It's going to be a nice warm day. Probably a really good day to get out and do some things too in and around your house. Do some stuff in the landscape, maybe a little mulching. There's a lot of people still doing that. Keep
spraying
the lawn looking good.
Weeds.
Spraying. Yeah, there's a lot of weed activity. You know.
Good night. Not a lot of weed activity. It has gone berserk.
So did you say like good night? There's that much?
Oh, man, I tell you what, we were joking, you know, 3 weeks ago about me not watering my lawn. So, you know, because I'm an open book and I'm honest about everything, I should have watered. I should have listened to my father, Tony, and listened to him. But because I didn't water, there was a lot of dieback. At the same time, I had a mole, so there was some extra dieback in the lawn. And in 3 weeks, the amount of weeds that creeped into the lawn because of the grass not being full and thick, I was shocked. It was absolutely amazing how quickly they got in there. And I started to do some weed spray just to get things under control, because you need to do it. Because a lot of those products you can't seed for 2 to 4 weeks, some of them even longer. And if you're going to overseed your lawn, we're a month away from September.
Well,
what is seeding time?
This, excuse me, this is the month when we get into August that you need to make a determination what you're going to do in September with your lawn.
Mm-hmm.
Are you going to totally renovate it? Are you just going to go about it and treat it in various spots? Because now is the time to get rid of some of these pesky weeds. And I want you to be ready. We say this all the time, to start sowing grass seed right at the beginning of September. I don't want you to call me up or call us up at the end of October and say, hey, can I still sow grass seed?
Because we're going to tell
you to think about that right now.
Why are we going to, what are we going to tell them about the probably after the first week of October or the second week of October? If somebody says, hey, Tony, I want to throw some grass seed, what are you going to tell them?
Sure. I don't know if it'd come up this fall. You might see some activity next year, you know, and then it all depends upon how much moisture.
Right.
When we go through the winter, does the seed stick around, stay viable, or does it lay dormant and wet and soggy and decay?
Right.
That's the big question.
So what about weeds? You're talking about weeds. What should I spray?
Well,
what should I use?
Let's just make this one right now, our landscape problems and solutions, because I'm seeing a lot of things in the lawn, a lot of crabgrass, and it's still in its infancy stage. It's starting to take a hold, and it's going to ramp up. It's going to take off. And I just saw some at someone's house the other day that is in full seed, believe it or not.
Already?
Already.
Wow.
And it was really weird, because in other lawns, it depends on if you're cutting it. You know, when you're cutting it, you're keeping it at bay and from really going to seed sometimes. But, you know, when you go after crabgrass, there's a couple things you need to be aware of. And one is, when we talk about spraying various things, it's all about temperature. Once we break 85 and get up near 90, don't even do it, because you're going to do more damage to the turf than you are in regards to what you want to get rid of. And you can use Fertilume's crabgrass killer.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the weed out container now. And that's a product that contains quinclorac. And it's effective on young crabgrass. So right now at this point in time, I think you'll be very effective with it. Don't let that stuff go to seed, because when it seeds, it'll be there next spring. And that's when you need to make sure that you're on that pre-emergent program.
And even this year, like pre-emergence, you put them down with all the rain, it used up. So there was a lot of people. And that's why crabgrass is worse right now, is because all the rain came. So you're like, you may be thinking, and right now, I got crabgrass. I put down the pre-emergent. I put down the first step from Fertilome. It didn't work. Yes, it did. but we had record-setting rain, and it used the product up. So in order to prevent crabgrass this year, this late, you would have had to have put down a second application. Most people don't. So now you got to spray. And I am seeing crabgrass everywhere. I'm also seeing Dallas grass, mm-hmm. which the only you can tell the difference if you really know what you're looking at. But to just the amateur, look at the seed head. The crabgrass seed head is very small, very thin. The Dallas grass is going to be a much wider seed head. But unfortunately, we don't want it to get to that stage. But if you want to know which one it is, that's the easiest way to tell. Also, you can look at the roots and kind of get into that aspect of it as well. But crabgrass right now that is mowed doesn't look like crabgrass to me. It looks very full and thick, and it's not branching out because a lot of people are mowing it. It's just, to me, right now, doesn't look like what we think crabgrass
should
look like.
And it has a little lighter green to it, uh-huh. believe it or not. So, and it's got a real nice smooth leaf surface to it at the moment. The other day I was going down to the mailbox and I noticed quite a bit of it in one of my neighbor's yards. And it's one of those things, if you don't take care of it, like you said, that pre-emergent product, we had to come back and give it a second application. And this is the way that it works. That pre-emergent product, when it's applied at the appropriate times, when it starts to break down, what it does, it forms a barrier and a top quarter inch, half inch layer of the soil. So when seed starts to germinate, it dies off immediately. So that's the protection element of the pre-emergent. Like Bob said, we had a lot of rain. As a result of all that rain, that quarter inch to half inch barrier that's on the surface of the soil, the water flushed through it. It took that product out. It broke it down. And that's why you're seeing a lot of these issues.
Yeah. Weeds are going crazy. And if your lawn got stressed because you were like me and didn't water as much as you should, you have more issues. And now, between now and the next 2 weeks, are the best time to start taking care of all your weed issues in your lawn. But you got to watch your temperatures because a lot of these products don't want to work over 85 degrees. So you need to check temperatures. Also, a lot of them will say rain fast in 30 minutes or rain fast in 2 hours. As much as I love the rain fast, sounds great, but if we can get 12 to 24 hours of dry time, we're going to have a much more effective kill, and we're going to get rid of those weeds a lot better.
You know, well put, and I'm glad you said that. Read the label. When you get into the label, it will tell you, although it might say rain fast in 6 hours or 8 hours or 12, it will tell you inside that label, when you read it thoroughly, if it happens to rain within 24 hours, guess what? You may need to reapply.
Yeah.
That's why I want to take that one right out of the equation off the bat. You know, right off the bat, if pay attention to that forecast. Make sure there's no rain, if at all possible.
And temperatures. I had a lady call the nursery yesterday, and she's coming in today. She's bringing me pictures of some weeds. She thinks she has crabgrass. She tried spraying with something that she bought from a box store, just went in and said, oh, it says crabgrass. And I asked her, was that quinclorac? Do you know what the active ingredient was? And she's like, I don't know. I threw the bottle away. It didn't work. I said, well, how long ago did you spray? She said, 2 weeks ago today, and I'm seeing no results. I said, well, there's multiple reasons for that. Could be you mixed it wrong. Could be that the product actually doesn't kill crabgrass. But sometimes if it can yellow crabgrass or damage it, they can still put it on the label. So, you know, even though it's on the label, some things crabgrass, you've seen it where it says crab will kill crabgrass. You spray it. It doesn't work as well as it should.
Mm-mm.
So there are those issues.
Yes. And that's why you need to go to a garden center, a nursery. We're going to tell you what products to use, and we carry those products that are effective. One of my favorites, you know, we talk about the products, you know, that contain quinclorac, and I don't want to get all technical with various names, but look for products, too, that contain Phenoxaprop.
Yeah.
I've had really good success with Phenoxaprop as a crabgrass killer, and I have to give it the edge over quinclorac. Especially when crabgrass is established and a little bit older.
Yes, I think that's the key. Right now, I think the quinclorac will do
exactly.
very well, but it needs a second application. That's a lot of this as well. So, and we're going to continue talking about some of our problems and solutions with weeds. when we come back. But we want to remind you, if you have a question, to give us a call at 749-B105. If you want to send us pictures on Facebook or send us a question, we'll do our very best to answer that as quickly as possible. But just if there's anything you want to add or you have some problems with your lawn, now's the time to start talking about it and get your game plan on so we can get things taken care of. So stick with us. You're listening to In and Around the House with Tony Works and Bob Bard. We'll be right back.
Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we've been talking about landscape problems and solutions and primarily things that have creeped into our lawns this spring, late spring, early summer, as a result of some of the pre-emergent products not lasting as long as we would like for them to because of all the rain amounts that we've had thus far this season. So things are cropping up, and nutsedge is another one, and nimblewill is another one that I'm seeing a lot of. It's all over the board,
it's
Bob.
It's nasty. I mean, the amount of weeds.
Say it's that again.
Nasty. I mean, it is. If you have a thick lawn, kudos to you. Like, if you're like Tony and you've done your watering and you've manicured and you've gone out there with scissors and hand pruned that lawn like Tony, you don't have really a weed issue. But if you were lazy, and I'm going to be honest, I was. I didn't water the way I was supposed to, and you got some dieback, you have some weeds. My neighbor, Charlie, he watered a little better than I did, and his lawn looks better than mine because he did a little bit more watering. He needs to spray some weeds, but it's nothing as bad as mine. And then the nutsedge, it's gone berserk. I mowed on Wednesday, and Thursday was an inch above the rest of my
lawn.
Won't
you listen to those guys on B105?
I should listen to those guys more often. I'm like the painter's house that needs painted.
I hear you. The
janitor's house that needs cleaned. You know, it's just... I honestly just was working. I'm lazy. It's not something I really want to tackle. But I'll be honest with you. I started last week working on getting rid of weeds because I know I'm going to need to seed. And so I'm getting after it.
And this is where I say I'd rather pay the water department.
Well, it would have been a lot better.
My time is worth something. And it's one of those things where you could be enjoying maybe the golf course, a round of golf, versus working on the lawn.
You know, I should have listened to my elders. They say that when you're older, you're wiser, and you know, you definitely had some wisdom on that. So, I gave you credit even when you weren't here on that. By the way,
and you did.
I did.
Well,
I gave you credit, and Alex will attest to that. You know, I'm like, I should have listened, and I should have watered more, and I didn't. But the mole didn't help either. My goodness, the mole didn't help either.
I have a mole. I caught one the other day. Then this is the truth. I was going to post him on Facebook, but I don't know. To me, catching moles is rather easy. But
to my house and
I had one the other day, just tore up an area in the backyard. And I'm thinking, you got to be kidding me. I used to never have mole issues. So this is the truth. The WireTech mole trap, I went out there, I set the trap, and about an hour later, a little over an hour later, voila.
I saw your picture.
I had him.
He gone.
Yeah. That was the quickest I've ever gotten one. I'm getting better. But anyway, on the other side, up in the front left of my house, there's another little mole that's he's traveling between houses. He's in my yard sometimes and my next door neighbor's.
So you got to get him.
I'm going to get him.
He's the Molinator.
He works,
the Molinator.
He doesn't know I'm coming after him.
He will.
He's got his brother.
He's looking for him.
They better take his picture and put it on a milk carton because he's going to be missing. How you like that?
I do.
I'll fix him. But anyway, what about nimblewill?
Oh, man, nimblewill. That's a nasty, nasty weed.
I think the word of the day is nasty.
It is, and it's hard to identify sometimes if you don't know what it is, and there's no great solutions. Sometimes the absolute best solution is... Roundup kills all, glyphosate, kill it good, don't just reseed instantly, kill it, make sure it's gone, reseed or sod. And if you go that route, you're going to be in pretty good shape. But if you got small patches, get out there and kill it now. You can spray it a couple times, and then you'll reseed here in September.
I agree. Now's the time to do it, because August is like, get all the bad out so you can bring all the good in September.
Well, I'm going to spray. I'm going to start tackling my weeds all this month.
If you have a hefty pocketbook and you want to go out and buy Tenacity,
mm-hmm.
that's a selective approach to it. And Tenacity does an excellent job. But what does that run, about 80 bucks?
Something like that.
Yeah.
You only use a small amount, so if you and your neighbors have it, you can right. share. That's a good thing. Or family members, you can go together, and it makes it a little bit more affordable. But when you and I were playing golf the other day,
mm-hmm.
we noticed that they have sprayed some Tenacity, because Tenacity bleaches everything and turns it white.
Turns it white, yes.
And they had killed some crabgrass, and there was something else, and I forgot what it was off the top of my head when we were playing.
A number of things, yeah. There were a number of things.
They did a good job of getting rid of it.
You could tell that when you see that bleached out weed, that it was trumped by Tenacity.
Yeah, it nailed it.
Good stuff. Good stuff. So,
but there's a lot of weeds, and we're going to talk about it all month, because you got to do it now. You have to kill them now.
What's up with the shortage of some of the nutsedge killers?
It's bad.
It really is. I can't get my paws on any nutsedge killer.
If you have nutsedge, you need to get to any garden store that has it. I talked to Bart from Burger Farm yesterday. He's like, hey, where'd you get yours? I said, I haven't. I've tried to order it from everywhere I could, and Sedgehammer is out for a couple weeks. The Ortho products, Ortho is out. So that means that's more of a nationwide type problem. The Sedge Ender from Bonide, I love it. It works. The problem is it's got prodiamine in it. So guess how long before you can seed? So if you're doing that one, you're not seeding until the beginning of October.
Well, here's something else I want to point out. When you have those pre-emergent products that kind of follow up with that herbicide,
mm-hmm.
you can break the barrier, but you better dig deep and scratch deep. You can break the barrier, but I don't tell people that all the time, because sure enough, they may not do it adequately enough. And it's like, Tony, you said I could do this, but it can be done. But I do like that product, especially if you're in the landscape, if you're in the beds. Yep. With that added protection of getting rid of, you know, the nutsedge, and having that element of protection after the fact, I really like it. But, you know, this has been the year of nutsedge, and all those nutlets underground are going, wow, it's crazy.
Well, mine are. Everything in the beds I was able to kill mm-hmm. with the Kilzol. I sprayed it, and it died. I had some old leftover of the Fertilone product that they don't make anymore in the packet, like Sedge Hammer.
The high-yield product?
High-yield product. Yeah. I had one from last year. It worked. You have to use a surfactant with that one still. And then the Sedge Ender worked really well, but I didn't get it all, so I got to go back and spray again, and I got to get after it.
Yeah, there you have it. I mean, there's a shortage, and people are coming into the garden center. It's like, I'm sorry, I'm out.
If you find it, get it.
If you find it, you better buy it, and don't price shop. There you have it, about nutsedge. When we come back, what plant am I? 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirfs with Bob Bard. We'll talk about that one in just a moment. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirfs, alongside here with Bob Bard. And if you're just joining us, welcome. And it's going to be a beautiful day, so get out and make the best of it. And also, don't forget Beer Fest. We all like beer, maybe, maybe not. But that's taking place today at Smale Park.
And they have Waterfest for me.
They have Waterfest for Bob. So when Bob and I go out and hook up and we go golfing or do whatever, it's usually a beer for me and a glass of milk for Bob.
Glass of milk? No, it's either a vitamin water, Gatorade, or ice water.
See, I remember the old detective shows, Barnaby Jones. No, he would go into a bar and order a glass of milk. I never did get that.
You know, sometimes when it's really hot outside, an ice cold glass of milk is not a bad thing. You know, some people it's like an ice cold beer, you know, but
don't forget, at the 8 o'clock hour, our good friends from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing will be joining us. That's Ryan Houlihan. He's a wealth of knowledge, and he's got a partner coming in with him today. I've never met Andy Caudill. So looking forward to having those guys coming in, and yet to start thinking about, we're not far away from the fall and winter months, although we're still in the middle of summer. But be proactive. If you've had some issues with your heating system, these are the guys you want to talk to. If you're having issues right now with your air conditioning, these are the guys you want to talk to. And I can attest to this. They've done some work for me more than once, a couple of different times, and I have been extremely pleased with Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing. So You want to reach out to these guys for the best information and advice. So hang in there with us at the 8 o'clock hour. Before we went into the break, Bob and I said we're going to talk about what plant am I? Give me a drum roll over there, Alex. All right. That's really good.
That was really good.
That was really good.
That's why he's a professional.
I'm expecting more and more from you every week, and you always deliver.
He never disappoints, does he?
No, he never disappoints.
Except for maybe right there.
So, Bob, tell us what our plant of the week is.
Our plant of the week is the, I just lost it for a second. It's the tricolored beech.
No, you're right. No, what plant am I? I got it mixed up.
Which one are you doing? You see, you threw me off because I thought we were doing what plant am I?
That was my fault. Let me start that over.
It's not Thursday.
No, it's not Thursday, by the way. Let me back up. Bob, tell us what plant am I?
It's the sensitive plant.
There you go. That's better.
There we go. It's the sensitive plant, and our listeners, a lot of them nailed it.
They did. Mimosa pudica.
Pudica.
Pudica. The sensitive plant.
Yes.
Also, a.k.a. the humble plant, a.k.a. the shameful plant. But what's really interesting about this particular plant, and for those of you that saw it on our Facebook page, you could see where I put my hand on the foliage and pulled it back. And when you touch that plant, all the foliage leaves fold up. They kind of droop. They are shy. When you touch that plant, it's very, very shy. It kind of withdraws. Really interesting, isn't it? It's a really cool plant. Yes, it is.
It's a tropical. It's not going to survive the winter. You're going to have to, if you take it outside, you're going to have to bring it in for sure. If you have pets, though, be a little careful.
Yeah, you know, while I'm chewing on this, it could be a little toxic, but really it's a cool plant. And, you know, for the most part, not many people, will use this one in the landscape or buy it as a house plant. It is available from time to time. Mm-hmm. We just happened to get a couple in the other day, and I thought it was really, really cool just because of the way that it behaves when you touch it. And it doesn't get very big, around 18 inches in height, and its native environment is kind of invasive. You know, it's from South America, but it's a really cool plant. It's got those delicate fern-like leaves, and it will get like a lavender purplish bloom on it. And if you have one, or if you've had one, and you do find one, it's really a cool plant. Kids like this one.
Yeah, well, the fact that it changes based on human touch, or whether sunlight, or air, or bugs. I mean, there's a lot of things, but this plant changes. And you need to see the video. When you touch it, it closed up. It was like a defense mechanism. It just closed itself like, nope, don't touch me. Stay away from me. You know? And then a couple minutes, it starts to open back up.
Yeah, a little
again.
Bit later on, it will just open back up. So it's some sort of a defense mechanism, but I never could really pinpoint what it was all about. You know, I don't know if insects were to land on it, if it discourages them, or when it does fold up, they don't have as much room to hang out, or they might think that it's a dead plant. I don't know, but it's a defense mechanism of some sort.
Yeah, they use it to defend against critters, too. So, like, if little critters are kind of coming up to it and they're worried that something's going to happen to it, they're saying that as it closes up, the critter's like, whoa, wait a minute, what just happened? And scurry away.
Mm-hmm. You know? But I just thought it was an interesting plant. Yeah, are we going to really use it in the landscape? Unlikely. But the what plant am I can be anything. It might be an indoor plant, house plant, at some point in time. It might be a tree. It might be a shrub. You never know, but we do our best to keep you on your toes, and we do that every Friday. We try our best to get it in on Facebook around 7:30-ish in the morning, and it's just a fun thing to do.
Were you not impressed with how many of our listeners got it again? I mean,
we have smart listeners.
I mean, it is amazing how intelligent
our audience is.
It really is. Yeah. I shouldn't be shocked because every week they nail it. Every week.
Do you think it's too easy?
That's not easy. That was not an easy one.
That was not an easy one.
The only time we've ever fooled anybody is when we altered the picture a little bit on one of those boxwood or holly early in the season.
Oh, it was a close-up.
Yeah, it was the close-up, and so you threw them off. But other than that, we have never stumped the listeners completely. So I'm amazed, and I love it. I absolutely love it that our listeners are that well-knowledgeable.
Well, I tell you what, I have something interesting to post for next Friday. And that's all I'm going to say. We just got some interesting plants in that are really cool. Kids love these, by the way. Just a little hint.
So
there you have it.
There
you know
have
what?
It.
I'll tell you, let's just make this a back-to-backer. So when we come back, let's do the plant of the week.
We were going to get it right this time?
I'm going to get it right this time. You know, I just...
You had a senior moment there.
I have a lot of senior moments. Thank you, by the way. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. Chime in. Feel free to give us a shout. Anything you want to talk about. You know, if it's home-related, gardening-related, we're here for, another hour and a half? So give us a shout. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. It's going to be an awesome day. We're just looking outside here at the studio window, and you just see the sun coming up, and it's shining there on the P&G towers. And you can see the Great American Tower off in the distance, and it's going to be an awesome day. And I said it a couple of moments ago in other past breaks. When we came out of the break, it's beer fest. You know, I enjoy a beer here and there. And take that in. If you don't have anything on your plate or anything to do today down at Smale Park, it's a beautiful park, beautifully landscaped. It's just a wonderful piece of Cincinnati. Take it in and enjoy it. You know, I can't say it anymore.
Is that going on all weekend or is it just Saturday?
I'm not really sure.
We'll have to find out.
I know it's kicking off.
Matt Cooper was talking about it last night. On his show when he was finishing up after Amanda and Jesse, and he was all excited because his girlfriend, I guess, doesn't drink a whole lot of beer. So all the tickets that, I guess they give you some free tickets to go down and sample some different things, he was getting all her samples. So Amanda and Jesse were giving him a hard time saying, you know, maybe you might want to check on him on Monday to see if he can make it into the office.
I have my tickets around here somewhere, so. You need any, Bob?
No, I it's not my thing. So
you want to go to Milk Fest or Water Fest?
The kids and I can go to Milk Fest.
Hey,
at least you know every time we're out, you'll always have a designated driver. I'm always your guy.
Well, I had to hang out with you a little more. What do you think, Alex? I didn't know that.
So
we have our own Uber driver here in the studio.
I'm very expensive for driving.
That's all right, man.
I still beat
getting in trouble, and that will help me stay responsible. Just hanging out with you. So,
well,
that's
you know,
a good thing.
After seeing that golf game, you know that you had.
I'll tell you what,
week.
It was bad. 36 holes for me in one day for this old fella. It took some energy out of me, and. Bob and I went golfing last week. I golfed early, you know, I know this is not important, last Sunday, and later on met up with Bob and your good friend Mike Peterman, nice guy from,
Queen City Propane.
And what was funny, I have to tell you this story real quick. I had a drive and went way left up on this hillside. And usually, you know, the way the ball was, if the ball's below your feet, it's going to go right. So I thought, I'm going to compensate for it.
You just didn't.
No, it went right up in the corner next to that building, and the alarms went off. I guess people thought I was trying to get in. I don't know what was going on.
Yeah.
But
you did hit it the wrong way.
We were over at California Golf Course, and that's a fun track. It's a different track. But
there were some really neat trees. And for us, you and I, even being out together, we can't help but talk about the trees and the things that were going on and seeing some of the big, I think it was some big hickories.
Oh, those hickories.
You and I couldn't even wrap our arms around together. It would have taken all four guys that played golf to wrap your hands around some of the big trees that they have in California.
Maybe we would have needed a fifth. Yeah, it was huge. But always good times. Maybe this Sunday we'll get out and golf. You know, Twin Oaks is another great place. Yeah. You know, those old oak trees. That's a fun course. It's a flat course.
It is. But going to going back to our break, we were talking about, and you
our
brought
plant
it up
of the week.
Segment before, was the plant of the week. And Tony, why don't you share what that is?
Well, I will tell you this. I'm going to start it with maybe what I would end with. You give this plant, you put it in the right location, and you will not be disappointed. I'm telling you right now, this is a beautiful specimen. It's one that you don't see often in the nurseries. You'll see occasionally. You don't see it out and about often either. And that is the tricolored beech tree.
Why do you not see them as readily available in the garden center?
You know, I don't know. I know that I've had them in the past couple of seasons. And, you know, you really have to talk to somebody sometimes to say, this is an interesting specimen. And what I like about it is it's a medium-sized growing type of tree, and I love its shape. The fact, you know, it gets around 30 foot, give or take, but the profile, it's not as wide as it, you know, as it gets tall. You might see it around the 20 foot range in width, but I love the foliage on this particular tree. And when you see it leaf out in the spring, Bob, you can attest to this. You've seen this tree. Those pinky shoots in it is very, very striking. And as it starts to open up and mature, you get the dark purple leaves with that rosy color around the outer margins, the edges.
It's variegated almost.
It's variegated, and it's a beautiful specimen. I can't answer why you don't see them too often. I can only tell you of a couple that I've seen of mature size. One's up on Southern Avenue in Latonia. It's beautiful, and it's been there for years. It's long lived, deer resistant. It's slow to grow, though. Very slow.
I really like it. I think sometimes it scorches if it gets real hot in the summer
sun,
so it'll scorch. It doesn't handle poorly drained soils. So sometimes our clay, I think, because it stays moist at times, mm-hmm. they're harder to get started. So I think that's why you don't see as many.
Well, come
on,
it's
a really cool plant.
Hey, Alex, is this Debbie Downer over here? It gets leaf scorch. Don't you get a sunburn? You'll get one next week when you go to the beach.
Don't you think that we should tell the listeners all the facts?
Well, yeah,
are you a partial fact kind of guy?
I'm partial facts, man. I'm going to tell you the best
good.
Quality.
Yeah, you're just telling all the good stuff.
No,
that's right.
Not that.
No,
I
love
you the
this
good
plant.
I'm saying that jokingly.
I'm not playing it down. It is a beautiful tree. It is not necessarily the easiest to grow. You're not just going to stick it in the yard and go, there you go.
Well, let's go back to what I said when I introduced this particular species.
Mm-hmm.
In the right location, it will not disappoint. And I couldn't agree with you anymore that it's important that you get some shade, especially in the afternoon, a little bit of reprieve there, and you will not more than likely see the leaf scorch issue.
And I think this one is better than some of the other beech trees as far as hardiness.
It's very hardy.
I think some of the other beech trees do not handle the wide variety of soil conditions or the hard clay that we have. That's why you don't see them as much native in our woods. But if, like you said, if you get them kind of in kind of a grouping of some trees, but there's still some adequate sunlight, but it's a little bit more dappled, it's not direct all day, I think you'll have better success with this tree.
I think it would be a wonderful perimeter type of tree. In a huge landscape bed. But you're right. You got to give a little bit of afternoon protection from hot sun.
Yep.
And if it's getting a little bit more sun, it'll tell you. It'll get a sunburn. That's what we call leaf scorch. And when you see that, it doesn't necessarily, you know, kill a tree by any means. But this is one of those things, one of those mechanisms that trees will take on or do. When I was saying a little while ago, plants tell us,
mm-hmm.
hey, put me somewhere else. I'm going to perform better for you. Even if it's a plant that doesn't bloom profusely like you know that it's capable of, or if something that gets dried out too quickly, those are plants telling us, hey, I need to be in the right location. And that's what it's really about.
When would you tell the listeners what would be the best time to plant this particular tree?
You know, I would plant this in the fall or spring.
Mm-hmm.
You know, would I want to plant it in the middle of summer? I personally wouldn't be hesitant to do that because I know what to expect. You just got to water it. It's a great question because a lot of times, you know, I don't know about you at the nursery up at Bard's. I want to bring in a lot more plant material than what I have been. But a few weeks ago when we got really, really hot, one is I don't want to water a lot of stuff, mm-hmm. but you're doing landscape installs. I'm not. Scott Maddox, he's doing landscape installations.
Right.
I'm not. I'm in the retail environment. And when I see foot traffic, you know, come to a halt or really, really slow down, I won't bring in those plants in that kind of weather or those situations.
It's perfectly fine to go plant a tree even when it's hot.
Yes, it is.
As long as the tree is either in a container or it's already pre-dug. And what I mean is it's dug in the spring, put in a burlap sack, and then it's in holding beds. It's perfectly fine to do this. What we don't want to do right now is dig one that's already established and burlap it and do it now. That we're going to wait until fall.
I was getting ready to let that one roll off my tongue. There are some people that will dig and burlap things and plant it at the worst inopportune time.
Like now.
And how do they get away with that? That's what's really, really important when it comes to bald and burlap stuff.
And that's just what you need to ask your independent garden center. Ask them because, you know, all of our bald and burlap stuff, I'm not bringing anything new in until fall. The container stuff, it's fine, you know. And some of the spruce trees that I have, they're there, they're up, they're dug. But they're just in temporary beds, so they're fine. You can plant those. You just need to make sure you're watering properly. Now, what does that mean? It just depends on the weather. Right now, if you're planting something new, I'm watering at least twice a week, fairly heavy, at least through the month of August to make sure I keep these things nice and healthy. If we get some rain, no big deal. But definitely, if you want to plant, there is no reason you can't go get some plant material and put it in the ground.
You got it. There you have it. That was our plant of the week, the tricolored beech tree, a beautiful specimen. Like Bob said, a little suntan lotion there. When we say that, moving it into an afternoon shady spot, get a little bit of reprieve, and you won't have any leaf scorch with that beautiful specimen. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Barr. We have to take another quick break. If you have a favorite tree or shrub and you want to share that with us, we're here to hear about it because we want to talk about interesting specimens and things in the landscape. And don't forget, too, at the top of the hour, our good friends from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing will be in the studio to join us, and we'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Bard. And we've covered a lot of ground thus far this morning. Have we not, Bob?
It's flying by.
Where does time go? Flies by. It's hard to believe we're in August.
I know. I mean, it just seems like the other day we were June and pollinator month.
Pollinator month, we were crazy
with that.
What about in February and spring's right around the corner?
Yeah, I know. Now we got back to school. You got, you know, high school football. You know, Kentucky's got a big old volleyball tournament down where all the high school kids are going down to play volleyball in Lexington this weekend. You know, it's just, it shouldn't feel like it, but I think when kids start getting back to school, it almost feels like summer's over. But we still have a month and a half, almost.
We have a lot of summer, but it will go by rather quickly. Watch and see. And, you know, going into the fall season, that is that's my favorite time of the year. I love the fall. I like it when it's cool, crisp. I like it when the leaves turn. I don't want to jump the gun. We're still in the middle of summer. I'm not trying to get to fall quite yet, but I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I'm not ready for summer to be over. I know it's hot on days, but I am not ready for summer to be over. And I'll bet you that the guys at Arlinghouse Heating and Hair aren't either, because they've probably been busy, you know. They've probably been really busy.
You know, that would be a good business to be in, because people like to be warm when it's cold, and they want to be cool when it's hot.
Yep.
So you're always busy. When do those units usually go out?
When they're not supposed to.
In that season.
And Ryan, he's been in before. And always a wealth of knowledge when he comes in from Arlinghouse to really teach people and educate all of us, you know. And there's been so many tips that he's given that's really helped me. You know, one few weeks ago he gave was talking about the humidity in the house in the summer. So I turned the dehumidifier on, was taking some water out. I couldn't believe how much moisture was in the basement. And I noticed that even because it was sucking so much air from the basement, it really seemed like it helped the whole house. Even though I was just taking the water out of that lower level, it seemed to really make a big difference. So, you know, and I think he's also said several times, hey, if you got some issues, first thing, check your filter. You know, during that heat spell, I was paying attention, and I know when it's, you know, 100 degrees, it's only going to bring the house down about 25 degrees. So it might not keep it at 72, or it might struggle to keep it there when it was so hot. So first thing I went down was check my filter.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, it wasn't horrible, but it wasn't perfect. So I just replaced it. Just put a new one in. And I noticed a difference. And those are all tips that Ryan gave me from Arlinghouse Heating and Air that helped.
Alex, did you hear that? He took the time out to go down to the basement and check his filter. But he won't take the time out to go out and water the front lawn. Does that make sense?
Did you hear that, crickets? Did you hear crickets? You're trying to pin me on something and nobody cares. There's totally crickets.
Yeah,
nobody cares. You got to get off that horse. You're beating it. You're beating it up too bad.
Okay, I'll get off.
Get off that horse.
You finally took someone's advice.
Well,
that's what
I
like.
If it came from you, I probably would still have that clog filter. But because it came from Ryan from Arlinghouse, then I went ahead and got it.
Got it. I understand. That's
I was listening to the guys on B105, like you said earlier.
Yeah, that's what I want you to do. You know, real quick, there was something last week that I, if I'm not mistaken, I think you and Scott Maddox talked about, and that was some bagworm issues and activity that I'm seeing quite a bit of, and people come in often and ask me what to do about that. And it's real simple at this point in time, and if, in fact, you can do this, pick those off. Don't be afraid. They're not going to bite you. Pick every one of those off that you can possibly get off before you resort to any types of applications or sprays.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, Scott and I had a good conversation, and I talked about it, and it really came from a Facebook question that we got.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember. I think it was Kyle, and it was on Green Giant Arborvitae. And Arborvitae sometimes are more susceptible to some of those issues anyways. And yeah, pull it off, pick it off, but don't just throw it on the ground. They'll find their way back if you don't get rid of them. Put them in a baggie, smash them, get rid of them, because there's a lot of little ones to come next year. If you leave them and throw them on the ground, they'll find their way back to that branch. It's amazing how they move. And somebody yesterday asked me, you know, how does a bagworm move from tree to tree? And a lot of times when they're coming out of they're hatched and they're coming out of the bag from the year before, and they've got the little silk that they're kind of falling down, the wind will just blow them because they're so light. Sometimes it's just that. And then once they find a way to another tree, or if you have a hedgerow of trees like Arborvitae and they're touching side by side by side, it's easy for those things just to crawl right on down to each tree and make their way down.
Eventually they will. They'll find their way.
But if they need to spray, Malathion works pretty well. And I think you had said there was another spray.
Well, I like to go after them when they hatch, which is, you know, they've already done that some time ago using spinosad, yep, or BT. You know, those are natural products. Those are environmentally safe. And it's a real effective way to get rid of bagworms when they're in that young stage, the dunce cap stage.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's when you're most effective. But once they start setting up shop and they find home and they're hanging on branches and they're starting to defoliate some of your evergreens, once they set up and they get that bag developed to a point where it's later in the season, it's very, very difficult to use applications and sprays to penetrate that bag. It protects them.
Mm-hmm.
So still when they're developing it, and sometimes you'll see them, they'll come right out at the very tip at the bottom. I think that's when Malathion can still be effective. You know, I don't know if you and Scott had mentioned that, or if you had
that's
anything
what I used.
You'd like to go to.
I used it, and I used it at 1 tablespoon, which is a little heavy. But
a little heavy. Are you going over? Are you going under? Yeah, I'm with you.
I did a little heavy, and it took care of the issue. Because, I mean, one day I was sitting under my pergola, and I'm just talking to my wife, and I kind of, out of the corner of my eye, I'd look over, and I see movement. And I'm like, what is going on? And I look over, and it is bagworm infestation. It was horrible. I mean, you could see the bags moving.
Where was this?
This was in my backyard right under a pergola. There's some golden arborvitae.
Bagworm City.
Bagworm City. I mean, they took up residence. And then I wiped them out.
Mm-hmm.
And I pulled a lot of them, and then I wiped them out. And it nailed them. They were done.
But do your best just to physically remove bagworms. A lot of times, you know, some of these evergreens that we're removing bagworms off of, they're 4, 5, 6 feet. You can reach that. You don't have to go out and spend money on sprays, and you will be highly effective in preventing those guys from next year.
If you do it, you're going to have 1,000 times
more
next
year. That's right. You will. 749-B105, I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard. We're going to get our guests settled in from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing, and we're going to talk about our air conditioning units and also some things you want to be aware of and need to do before we go into the fall and winter months. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside my partner over here, Bob Bard, and our special guests have arrived from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing. And boy, it's been a hot summer thus far, and if you're in need of having that air conditioning unit looked at, These are the guys you need to talk to. And as we progress later into the summer, going into the fall and winter months, trust me, we enjoy a comfortable house. And if the furnace isn't really functioning like it should, or if it was struggling last year, these are the guys you want to talk to. And it's free advice. And they've done some work for me personally more than once, and I will attest to it. We've been very, very happy with their work. And I know that I have the utmost respect for you guys. You've done wonderful work for me at home, at our house personally. And it's a comfortable home. And like I said before when you were here with us, Ryan, that our upstairs bedroom was the hottest room in the house at one point in time in the summer months, and it was the coldest during the winter months. So we have Ryan Julian with us, and we have Andy Caudill. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Welcome, Andy. And I know you guys have been busy. What's going on?
It's been an interesting summer, to say the least. Yeah, absolutely. We've done a great job with staffing for the summer. So we've had plenty of technicians to meet the demand that's coming in. And, just trying to make as many happy houses out there as we possibly can.
I will tell you this. I'm seeing your vans all over the place. You can't miss the blue and the pink. And when I see those vans, it's like, I know somebody's in dire need. They need help with whatever it might be, especially with their air conditioning units. You guys have to be busy. I mean, this is your time to shine, isn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, we've got plenty of maintenance contracts out there, customers that, trust us year to year with, the maintenance in their home, whether it be heating and air or plumbing. And we appreciate all those loyal, customers trying to treat them right. And, if you think back to the summer, though, I mean, really, what was it? Was it June or July where we had that day that the high was like 65, 66? And that weather is obviously not very favorable.
Not for your business.
Not for our business. All the customers are very happy, homeowners out there. But yeah, it's just been kind of a strange ebb and flow to the summer and a lot more humidity type calls, coming in.
Mm-hmm.
With all these new thermostats, homeowners are now, privy to the information of what the humidity level is in the home.
Right.
And we're getting a lot more phone calls around that, more concerns.
Where should that be, by the way?
Yeah. So, I mean, there's some conflicting information out there on the internet, and it's because most of what's out there that's available to homeowners is directed more towards humidity in the wintertime. And if we can achieve, between 40% and 50%, in some of those more mild, cooler temperatures,
mm-hmm.
that's great. Mm-hmm. Some houses won't get there just because it's a little bit tough. And certainly the colder it gets, we have to kind of tune down our humidifiers. But as far as dehumidification goes in the summertime, I mean, most commonly I'd say houses are between, I see a lot of 55% to 60%, and that's a little bit on the high end. I've got a whole house dehumidifier in my house that mm-hmm. is specifically to control humidity. My heating and air system, it's a byproduct of cooling, is to remove humidity. But in order to get really like full control over it, because when it gets mild, your air conditioner is not running, right? And if it's not running, it's not dehumidifying. So I've got my dehumidifier separate. And I usually control my house around 45% to 50% in the summertime.
Got it. Bob,
and it's hard. We were just—I was talking about that. And I have a gauge in the basement, mm-hmm. and man, there's times where it's hitting up to 80. Yeah. I mean, it is just. And I'll turn the dehumidifier on. I just have a portable unit that's sitting there that I got to drain. It draws a ton of moisture out of the basement air. It helps with the. Sometimes you get that basement odor smell.
Absolutely,
it takes that away. But I noticed during that really hot spell, it made a difference with the cooling of the house. So it's sucking so much of my basement air.
Absolutely. And in humidity, specifically it's called relative humidity because it's relative to the temperature of the space. So in your basement, it's a lot cooler. So the humidity is higher there. It's about the same amount of moisture, but it's cooler down there. So it's relative to that as a percentage. And certainly with, musky odors and things like that, we call those mold farts.
Yeah.
Right. It's a bad word. We don't usually like to use mold, but, algae growth and things like that in the basement just kind of gives you that damp, musky smell.
It took it away, but absolutely. I don't, maybe it's just me, but it really seemed to help with the whole house.
And 50% of the air upstairs comes from downstairs because just like heat, you know, as the temperature rises, that air in the basement gets warmer. It starts to rise up. It carries that moisture up as well. So if you can control it in the basement, then, you know, you've got the whole house taken care of.
Yeah. So right. If you don't have a whole house, or maybe you can't afford one right now, it's a good place to start. It seemed to really help.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so they've got dehumidifiers out there that are freestanding. And they've also, the ones in our industry, you can get them ducted into your heating and air system to take care of all the air in the home. So
talking about humidity, and you're a homeowner and you have some issues with that and you want to add a dehumidifier, give me an idea, a ballpark figure. What does that typically cost?
Yeah, I mean, it can range, but for a professional installation, and certainly the products that we use April Air products, and anytime you use a licensed contractor with those products, you get the extended warranty on them, and which is a 5-year warranty on those. And then, it could be anywhere between $1,500 to $3,000 fully installed if it's ducted, and we're talking about electricity and draining and all of that. I actually had a problem with mine at the beginning of this summer, and because I am a contractor, it's registered, and 3 years after I bought it, I sent it back because it was out of refrigerant. You can't fix those things. You send them back. They replaced it 100%, and then they restarted my warranty. So now I have another 5-year warranty. It's a great American-made product.
And you know, yeah, it costs a little bit of money.
It does.
What does it save? So, that's the cost. So, you know, you might hear that number and people go, oh my goodness, I can't afford that. What does it save over a 5-year period? I bet it's more money than you put into it.
Can you really put a price on comfort, Bob?
Tony doesn't. Tony doesn't. No, you know, so, if you listen to the show a lot, you'll know Tony, there's not a price he won't pay to make even his lawn perfect. So,
well, I wish I could buy a golf game. I was putting a good price on something.
There you go.
But comfort, it's about being comfortable. When you get a little bit older like me, you know, it is. It's quit sacrificing.
Well, the big
thing. I don't
mean
in a bad way.
As far as, you know, savings goes, you know, it's hard to gauge and measure that. But, humidity is a direct correlation with comfort, right? So in the wintertime, when we add moisture to a dry space, the space feels warmer. So I can turn my thermostat down a few degrees because I'm warmer because the humidity is there. Likewise, in the summertime, humidity is a little bit cooler. I'm actually comfortable at higher temperatures. Why do you go out to the desert and it's 100 degrees out there, but you're like, oh, this isn't bad. Cincinnati's way worse than this, right?
Right. It's all about the humidity levels, mm-hmm. Definitely. We have to take a quick break. And when we come back, if you have any questions for Ryan, and Andy, we're going to get Andy engaged here in just a second. Feel free to give us a call, 749-B105. If there's something you want to talk about, you know, air conditioning related or even furnace related, I'm telling you, Ryan and these guys at Arling House Heating and Air and Plumbing, you have it right here, right at your fingertips. Just dial in, and we have to take this quick break. When we come back out of the break, we'll continue our discussion. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works alongside here with Bob Bard and our good friends from Arling House Heating and Air and Plumbing. And we have our special guest Ryan Julian in along with Andy Caudill. And I wanted to get to Andy in particular because you you've been with Arling House for a year. You were telling us during the break and you're primarily involved with the new side of the business with Arling House Heating and Air and Plumbing. And that's the plumbing element. Right?
Yeah, that's correct.
And what are you seeing a lot of, or you just get a hodgepodge of calls this time of year? What's going on in your department?
Yeah, right now we get a mixture of calls, anything from your sewers backed up to water heater isn't functioning the way it's supposed to smells. We get a lot of smells in the basement, and some of them can be pretty simple and some of them can be pretty extensive, but I mean, all the way from vanity faucets leaking, shower faucets leaking,
right,
like a mixed bag right now during this time of the year.
You know, you just hit the nail on the head with something. You're talking about odors and so forth. And sometimes when we start getting these foul odors, we know it's a sewer issue.
Yeah.
I just want to ask you this because I've been to places where I guess the old timers would do their own plumbing.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like they would take shortcuts and not always put the traps in.
Yep.
Is there a fix for something like that that can go over top of that drain to keep that sewer smell away or out or from occurring?
I mean, really the real full way of fixing it would be to install a trap. I mean, that's the correct way of doing it.
The saw up the concrete and redo it.
Yeah, or cut it in wherever the line may be, just because you want that water seal. That water seal is going to prevent that sewer gas from coming back out. And that's a big one when I was talking about when we get the smell calls. A lot of times in floor drains sit by themselves in the basement and nothing's draining into them. Well, as we all know, water evaporates. And as that water evaporates, then it allows that smell to start coming out of that drain. And like I said, a lot of the times it's just as easy as going in there with like a little pail of water, filling up that trap seal again, and back to eliminating that smell. So,
yeah, the reason why I was asking, because I've seen these things advertised before that, like, if you have a floor drain, you can just lift up the drain. And it looked like it was an inverted kind of a bell type setup or system that you would place over top of the actual drain hole itself and then put the sewer lid cover back over it, and it would allow water to go into it, but it somehow trapped the smell from coming from the other direction.
Yeah, them are used as well for if you have a drain that's also backs up occasionally, like from the flow of water, that bell will come up and close it to where it won't allow that water to come out as well. But it also works for the smell also.
Interesting. So,
You'd mentioned water heaters.
Yes.
And, you know, maybe should those be flushed? I mean, what should you do with those things?
So, yeah, I would definitely recommend after a new install of a water heater, just doing like an annual flush on it. So
just once a year.
Yep, once a year. And the thing you want to watch out for there is if you have your water heater that's like 10 to 12 years old and it's never been flushed before, you're kind of looking for problems at that point. Like you're asking stuff to operate that's never operated and it's under pressurized heat the whole time. So you may, if you have an older water heater versus doing it yourself and opening up a whole bunch of trouble, you might just want to have a professional out, take a look at it and see if it's even safe to do it at that point. So, and a lot of people don't know, I mean, you have a tanked water heater. The average life expectancy of a tanked water heater is around 10 years. So, and 10 years goes by faster than can be. So, if you're getting into that age, that's the age where it's like it may not be worth it at that point to do a flush.
Just ride it out.
Just ride it out.
Till you get, it'll tell you when it's due to be changed, won't it?
Yep. And a lot of the times, like we talk about water heaters, it's better to be proactive than reactive. Like you get around that age, it's time to start planning. Yep. Yeah. Especially in finished basements without a drain pan underneath of it. They can go out with you or without you being home.
And yeah. I had one go out while I was on vacation and started leaking.
Yeah.
And it didn't leak bad, but it started. And I was lucky it didn't blow or have a major leak. It was seepage. I'm like, uh-oh. And I just happened to come home and kind of going down to do some laundry. I'm like, wait a minute, that's not right. And all of a sudden there's a little trickle of water. It was going to the drain, but it had to get replaced. It was a while ago. So the reason I asked is because I forget how old mine is. I need to check.
Yeah.
But I got a feeling I'm probably pushing 7 years. So it's probably better just to leave it.
That's when it happens, when you're out of town, Bob. Yeah, you're going out of town next week.
I know.
There you go.
I know.
Yep.
Turn the water lines off to the machine.
I got somebody sitting at the house. They're watching the house, taking care of everything.
There you go.
So they're going to keep an eye on things for me.
You know, you brought up a good one about the valves and stuff. It's amazing the amount of houses that we go into and we ask like a homeowner versus going and rummaging through their whole basement looking for a main shutoff valve, asking them where it's at. And it's very, very few that even know where their main shutoff valve is.
I put a big tag on there that says main shut off or shut off to this. So if Tina is at home and she calls me at work, I can say, look up and you'll see that tag. And I have shown her where those are just for that reason.
That's good.
Because you never know, and mark those clearly. So whoever comes to help you or aid in any type of those water issues, it's huge.
Yeah,
might save you some major.
And those
issues
need to be replaced every so often too, don't they?
That's what I was getting ready to say too is, just make sure they work, not just knowing where they're at, but, you know, annually, like let's say you get on your little program to where you're doing your water heater flush and whatnot. Make sure your main shutoff works at the exact same time because you already got to shut the water off to the water heater to flush it. That would be a good time just to make sure it works as well.
Now, don't you guys have that part of your elite package that you guys do to have a happy house?
We do. So starting at the second quarter of this year, we released 3 new maintenance plans. And we're really trying to make sure that we, you know, incorporate every type of homeowner's needs. And our elite program is the highest one. And that one is $32.95 a month. And that includes your air conditioning maintenance, your heating maintenance for the year. It includes a plumbing inspection, a whole home plumbing inspection. So it's anything that water or gas touches, Andy and his team will go through and check to make sure that the health and safety of the water quality is where it's supposed to be. It includes your year supply of filters. And you also get one complimentary carbon monoxide detector with that plan as well, the first time you sign up.
That's a good deal.
Yeah,
that's a really good deal. Yeah.
You know, Andy, I have a question for you. The other day I was at it was a grand opening new deal with a box store that opened up, and I saw copper fittings that had the solder inside the fittings. Mm-hmm. Are those worth anything? Do they work is my question.
Yes, they do work. I don't use them. I'm just your old-fashioned solder on a roll. And
do you still have to flux those fittings those?
Yeah, okay. Yeah, because as the flux gets heated, it cleans the pipe.
Right.
And that's actually what draws the solder into the pipe and makes it a solid connection. Yeah.
You know, here's something, too. It's really weird. It seems like there's times, help me with the solder blends now. It's not, they're lead free.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it seems like it's just, you know, the old solder that you would use that has some lead in it, that flux, when you heated up those fittings, it would just draw that right in there.
Yeah.
Do you think a lot of people use too much flux or too much solder, I should say? I mean, I see that stuff like dripping everywhere.
Yeah.
Is it true you just put a little bit in there and it'll suck it in enough that it's a tight enough fitting?
Yeah. The trick to it is, when you're fitting two pieces of pipe together and there's no way for the air inside of it to escape as you're heating the pipe, you're going to get a consistent pinhole. Like if you have two shutoff valves shut off and you're soldering a coupling in the middle of it, it'll never seal because that gas inside of there needs to be released. So it'll give that the availability to draw that solder inside of it. So that's key. Another key when you're soldering copper is to make sure that the inside of the pipe is completely dry. Like if you get that slow and steady drip of the water inside of there, that's going to keep that pipe from heating the way it should, and it's also going to cause pinholes to be created.
I just had that issue the other day, so I used that old plug material. I don't know if that's a good thing, so I'm shoving that up into that 3/4 inch.
Yeah.
You know, every time, inevitably, I'm going to ask you this when we come out of the break.
Okay.
What is it with valves, man? It's like as soon as you turn one off or turn one on, if you not use it in a period of time, it's like, really? You got to start dripping on me?
Yep.
We'll talk about that when we come out. You know what I'm talking about, Bob?
I do know what you're talking about, but you got to hang on to that because we do got to take a quick break. But if you have a question for Arling House, you have anything about plumbing, heating, air conditioning, air quality, drains, clean, you name it, you got a question, give us a call, 749-B105. Also, you can hit us up on Facebook if you got a question, and we'll get it to them. So just stay tuned. You're listening to In and Around the House on B105, and we'll be right back.
Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and if you're just joining us, welcome. And we have our special guest in the studio with us this morning from Arling House Heating and Air and Plumbing. That is Ryan Julian, and we have also with Ryan Andy Caudill, and we're talking a little bit about plumbing. We're also talking a little bit about our air conditioning units and our heating units. And before we go a little further into the conversation, Ryan, give us your contact information. Just if someone needs to get in touch with you folks, they can do so rather easily.
Absolutely. Yeah, you can give us a call. It's 859-727-9000. You can reach us on our website. You can actually chat with us on our website and through Facebook and Instagram. So we're fully connected. ArlingHouseAir.com.
Awesome. And going back to Andy, before we went into the break real quick, and then we'll let Ryan talk a little bit about it. He likes to talk a little bit, but no, he's really good. A lot of information here. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, because Bob and I looked at one another, it seems as if whenever you turn off a valve or you turn one on, you know, and going back to if I go out of town, I'm turning off the valves, you know, to the wash machine. What is it about that when you turn one open? All of a sudden, after it's been off for a little bit, it just starts, it's this little drip.
Yeah.
You know, and are there better valves that you like? Because I can tell you, I always like the ball valves.
Mm-hmm.
That's just me.
Yeah.
Is there one that you have a preference for, or does it really matter?
Yeah, the ball valves are definitely the way to go anymore. like the gate valves where you got to turn, mm-hmm. turn. And mm-hmm. then when you go to turn the water back on, they break and it's stuck off at that point. The ball valves, as far as looking at safety, because that's what we want to try to focus on primarily is safety. They're just a 90 degree turn, just a quarter turn. And it's a lever that's a lot bigger than just like a little knob that you got to turn.
Right.
You turn that down 90 degrees and it immediately shuts the water off. As far as the leaking goes, we see that a lot as well. And that, again, is due to just the lack of use.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's just, like, even, like, the folks that have, like, bathrooms in their basements that never get used. It's always a great idea to go down there once a week, flush the toilet, turn the shower on, turn the vanity on, just let it do what it's supposed to do for a little bit.
Right.
Versus it's set there for 4 or 5 months, and now we have guests coming in, and we expect it to be operating at tip-top condition, and it's not because it's never been used. Stuff fails faster when it's never used than if it just has, like, periodic use to it throughout the house. So
we got I got a question, actually, from our good friend Mike Peterman. He sent a mm-hmm. question about his daughter's redoing a house in the Norwood area. It's, like, 100 years old, and his question is, they have one floor drain that's operating really slow. The other one drains sufficiently. Normally, are they tied together? That's the first question. And what's the best way for a do-it-yourselfer to go ahead and try to get that drain working better?
Normally, yeah, they would be tied together, especially if you're dealing with a, like you said, 100-year-old house.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to be on combination sewer where everything's going to go down one pipe, leaving the house as like a main artery coming from your home. And the do-it-yourselfer, the easiest step that I find with floor drains a lot of the time is if it's running slow, you can normally fill up about a 5-gallon bucket about halfway and dump it inside of it. And as you start to see that back up, stop. And oddly enough, grab a toilet plunger, get a good seal on it, and try to plunge it. Sometimes it just could be like lime scale buildup coming from the AC unit, discharging into it. And a lot of the times that's all it needs is just like that purge, because normally floor drains don't have like that active flow of water going down them. Mm-hmm. So stuff likes to sit in there and kind of harden up.
Okay.
So outside of that, it would just be like just a smaller auger, just to be real gentle, because it will have that trap seal in there and you don't want to damage that. Would be to maybe just churn stuff up a little bit and then again, flush it with the bucket and just kind of force it down.
Right.
And then obviously outside of that, if none of that works, just call a professional.
I was going to say, and then this is right up your alley. So if somebody can't do it themselves, this is when they call you guys and you can come out and do all that stuff.
Send the camera down it, see what's in there. And that obviously answers all the questions.
I was going to say that usually takes all the questions out.
No more questions.
You can see what's causing the problem.
We can locate where the pipe goes, the whole nine yards.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard, and we're talking with our special guest from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing. And if you're just picking up with us, that's what the discussion is this morning here at the 8 o'clock hour. And I wanted to turn the attention to you, Ryan, real quick. I had a friend just text me and wanted to know, sizing up a home when it comes to air conditioning, is there a formula for that? Or is there what's the process behind that? Because sometimes some people think you need a bigger unit. Is that so?
So as far as, you know, sizing up the home goes, there is a calculation. It's called a manual J. That's our industry to size the amount of cooling or heating capacity that a space needs. More specifically, we are calculating the rate at which, you know, heat infiltrates or escapes, you know, a house. And obviously, an older house, it's going to happen a little bit faster because of insulation. So we take that into account. We'll take a look at, you know, the attic to see how much insulation is in the attic. We look at the windows. Are they single pane, double pane, triple pane? You know, how many windows are in the house? How many door entries are in the home? How many people live in the home, right? All of that comes into play, even which direction the house faces, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if we've got some windows on the sunny side, then you're going to have a lot more heat infiltration. So sizing is very, very important, because if an air conditioner is too large for the home, it'll cool the house, but we don't get the proper amount of runtime. And if we don't get the proper amount of runtime because it's cooling it off really, really fast,
mm-hmm.
then it doesn't remove the proper amount of humidity. Now, humidity is a byproduct of cooling, but It is, you know, it's something that it looks at specifically to achieve, because, you know, the thermostat is just saying, hey, I want it to be 70 degrees in here and it's 72, cool me down.
Mm-hmm.
And just run until you get there. It doesn't care how long it takes. But if we don't have enough runtime, then humidity is a problem and you get the cave effect. And yeah, it's going to be clammy. You're going to have mold growing, in places that you don't want it, and it's just not going to feel comfortable.
Right. That's well put. We have, as a matter of fact, we have Lisa on the line with us this morning. Good morning, Lisa. How are you?
Good morning.
Good.
I had a question. In my house, we have a great air conditioner. We just got it about 5 years ago. But I noticed that we're starting to use a lot of fans in the house because the air conditioner, you know, like if you walk into the house, if you turn right and go back toward the bedrooms, it's kind of warm, but, you know, the other area, like in the living room, is really cold. So we're starting to use air, you know, fans to kind of blow the cold air into the other rooms. And with the air conditioner we have, I mean, it's a primo top model air conditioner. So I'm thinking that maybe our vents or something, somebody said something about if you have your vents turned the wrong way, that can affect how the house as a whole can be air conditioned. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. A lot of times when I have a customer who has some comfort issues, I mean, the best, solution would be to do an in-home consultation so that, you know, you have a professional in there really just kind of honing in on some things that, you know, you might not be able to describe to me over the phone, per se, without me seeing the home. But like for that room that is uncomfortable, you know, are there any windows in there? And if there are any windows in there, do we keep the shades drawn or do we like to leave that room nice and open? As opposed to the other room, you know, would it be maybe on the side of the house that doesn't get as much exposure? If that's not the case, if it's like, no, they're both the same, then it could be airflow delivery. So we could be delivering more air and have better return in the other room than the one that is, you know, warmer, because, you know, it's heat, you know, we call it heating and cooling, but we add heat to a space, but we remove heat in cooling, right? It's heat and heat removal. So if we're not sufficiently drawing the heat out of that room and bringing it back to the air conditioner, we're never going to cool that room properly, because you can't just blow cold air. I mean, imagine blowing cold air into a bottle. It doesn't go anywhere. We got to get the hot air out of it.
So it could be a return vent issue.
It could
number
be
of things,
yeah,
right?
Air balancing to where we just need to change up the delivery of airflow. It could be, you know, like I said, that heat infiltration or escaping, in this case, the infiltration. So maybe that one side of the house is easily infiltrated with heat. Maybe it's poor seals in the windows, or like I said, you're keeping the windows, you know, open. I know that in some houses, I've been to houses where, you know, I have a window in my house where there's no blind on it, right? It's an odd-shaped window, and I like the light coming in there, but that room is also warmer than the others because of it.
Yeah, that's a great question, Lisa, because my wife and I, we had the same issue, especially upstairs in our bedroom. And when Arling House did our heating and air, they put in a new return vent, which made a huge difference. And then one of the guys came back out, and they were there for about an hour. And I'm thinking, you know, what are they doing? But they were checking the temperature in all the rooms and adjusting the vents. And it made a huge difference. It really did for us. So, you know, that might be one of the situations. But well put. Great question, by the way.
Yeah. Thank you.
All right.
Thanks for taking it.
Lisa, have a great weekend, and hopefully you get that ironed out. We have to take another quick break, and when we come back, we will continue our discussion with our good friends here from Arling House Heating and Air and Plumbing, 749-B105. We'll be right back. Good morning, and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works, alongside here with Bob Bard, and our special guest this morning in the studio with us live are our good friends from Arling House Heating and Air and Plumbing, and that is Andy Caudill. He's their plumbing side, their division, and Ryan Julian, he's on the heating and air side. And while we were in the break there, we have a fellow here on the line, Doug, with us this morning. Good morning, Doug. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing great, Tony.
We're doing well. What can we help you with?
Question regarding insulation, blown-in insulation, or the foam insulation versus fiberglass insulation. Can you enlighten me on that?
I'm not an insulation specialist, but is there any difference that you know of, Ryan, when it comes to that? Or I know a lot of people go with the blown-in variety.
I would say that's probably the most cost-effective
way.
You can rent the hopper and get the bags and kind of blow it in. Certainly that.
Well, but from an efficiency standpoint, I'm hearing that these guys that with that blown-in, like, it looks like great stuff, basically, is a whole lot more airtight and more effective. Forget the cost for the sake of conversation. What works the best?
Yeah, I've had a lot of people, because I landscape a lot of new houses, and that's a big question that I always like to ask, because I think it makes a big difference, especially when you're building a house. You want an efficient house. Insulation is a key component to that. And some good friend of mine did the blown in all the way through. They're saying it seals the air gaps better, and they absolutely love it. Now, I have never personally used it. That's just going by what people are telling me, because anytime you can fill some of those air gaps, I think that really makes a difference, especially come wintertime, when the cold's blowing in.
All right. Thanks, guys. Y'all have a good day.
All right. You too.
Yeah. I know that the blown in, when you do that, that was a great question, by the way. And I'm not a specialist on insulation. That would be something good that we could have somebody come in and talk about that element of things.
I'd love to learn more about it. I'm just telling what I've heard.
And I wish I could have helped Doug a lot better than what we were able to. But I know that a lot of times with the rolled insulation too, you get that vapor barrier effect with it.
Mm-hmm.
And that can vary too, based on the thickness. And if it's a paper barrier, or sometimes, people are using the plastic barriers and so forth, but there's a difference in that. But I know that in our house, for example, it's all blown in upstairs,
yep.
In the attic, and it is more than adequate. But I know the exterior walls have the insulation with the vapor barrier.
Mm-hmm.
So that all varies. I'm not an expert at that, Doug, and I apologize, but that would be a great segment for us to look forward to and have on a future show.
And if anybody's listening and
yeah,
they've used it,
most definitely.
Let us know.
Yeah.
Share it so we can share it with Doug.
But that is an important factor when it comes to heating and cooling our homes, because, if you don't have a very good R insulation value, mm-hmm. you'll lose a lot of heat. And you just, things just don't run efficiently.
Well, you go back to those houses that were built in the 70s with hardly any insulation, and I remember we grew up in one, man. It made a huge difference when all of a sudden we moved to a house that had quite a bit of good insulation. It's like, wow. I mean, just even sitting, not feeling the drafts, it just made a huge difference.
Oh, yeah.
Huge.
It was interesting. We have Joyce with us, and I think, Andy, this might be for you. It's about a water heater. Good morning, Joyce. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine. Yeah, I just told the guy I must be pretty lucky because I moved in this house in 2003. The water heater was put in 2002, and it's still fine. However, I know that's a long time for a water heater, but I'm just wondering if that's like less efficiency. Is it costing more to run it because it's a gas water heater, and it seems like, well, that's my only gas I have in the summertime, and my gas bill is still like $21.
That's pretty cheap.
Yeah,
that's not a bad gas bill.
Yeah.
No, but that's the only gas item I have. I mean, I don't use air conditioning too much.
Yeah. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So what we see in the water heaters that reach that age is you have sediment in the water. And as that settles to the bottom of the water heater, it's going to form like a blanket of insulation in between the water and the flame that heats it. And so that flame does have to run longer the older the water heater gets in order to get the water to the temperature that needs to be. So you are absolutely correct that even though your water heater is still working, it is just by default, it's going to be operating less efficient than the first day it was installed. And also, water heaters were made more efficient in 2015. They were redesigned, some of them a little bit more than others, to where just to force them to operate more efficient. So I would definitely, with it being a 2003 model, that's putting you, or 2002 rather, that's putting you around 17 years old. I would at this point just have somebody make sure, efficiency aside, that it's safe to operate it.
Yeah, operate until she's done. I calculate that. If that's your only gas use, using item in the house, that's 70 cents a day. Divide that by 24 hours, you know, you're at like 3 cents an hour. That's pretty cheap. I think that's efficient to me.
I got my water heater set like on, I don't know, almost like vacation, because when I went to Florida, I turned it off.
Yeah.
For the month of Florida, or, you know, the month was gone just so it wouldn't burst. But that's what I was just wondering about. So just have somebody check it out.
That's a great question, and I like Andy's response to that. You know, let her roll until she doesn't operate anymore, but just make sure that things are efficient and there isn't any other issues with it from a carbon monoxide standpoint.
Yeah.
All right. Thank you. Enjoy your weekend. 749-B105, in and around the house. I'm Tony Wirth with Bob Bard, and we're with our good friends from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing. We have some great questions thus far. And if there's anything that's troubling you with your AC unit, or if you think that your furnace might be on the brink before we go into the winter months, these are the guys to talk to. Give us a shout. We'll be right back. Good morning and welcome back to In and Around the House. I'm Tony Works with Bob Bard and our good friends again from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing. It's always a pleasure to have you guys in. And we have a couple more calls that we just received during the break. And we'll try and get to those real quick. And one of those is Julie. Julie, good morning. How are you?
I'm great. How are you this morning?
We're doing well. Thank you. What is it we can help you with?
Yeah, so the last caller that you were on, you happened to mention carbon monoxide. And I've always had an electric furnace and air conditioner, so I've never had to worry about it. But my daughter recently bought a home, and it has a gas furnace, a gas air conditioner. So my husband went to one of the hardware stores to buy a carbon monoxide detector. And when he was there, they mentioned that not all carbon monoxide detectors detect all the gases that could leak from these units. Are there two different types of, is there a burned off and a non burned off gas that not all of them detect?
I'm maybe a little confused by the information provided to you, but you know, what I can tell you is carbon monoxide is the one that everybody worries about, right? I've never had a different type of gas that I was concerned about with a fuel burning appliance. You know, carbon monoxide, there are differences in carbon monoxide detectors, but it's the levels at which they detect. So most high level detectors, so the difference is there's a high level and a low level carbon monoxide detector. A high level detector is typically about 400 parts per million. And it has to detect 400 parts per million of carbon monoxide to the airspace for 15 minutes before it even lets anybody know. And the question that I always ask people is, if you were swimming in the ocean, would you want to know that there was a shark in the water before or after it bites you? I don't care how hard it bites you, but, you know, so a low-level detector is going to be something that detects somewhere between 35 parts per million and 75 parts per million, and it only has to detect it for 5 minutes before it sends an alert that, hey, there's something in the water here, and maybe you should either, you know, call somebody or, you know, check it out. You've got time to, you know, finish making breakfast and get a shower and get the kids off to school and, you know, all of that, because it's very minuscule to have, you know, the difference between 400 and 35 parts per million. That's the effects that you're already feeling at 400 are substantial. So,
Julie, may I ask you a question? Did your husband make that purchase?
He did. He bought the more expensive unit. I don't know the
parts per million. Yeah.
It'll say it on the back.
Yeah. It will say it on the back.
Okay.
There are differences, and that's a great question. And boy, it's a silent killer as well. And everybody should be aware of that. It's very, very important. And, you know, just read the detection ratio, I guess, parts per million?
Parts per million and response time.
And response time. And that's what it really boils down to. Are there any... go ahead. I'm sorry.
Is one in the house enough if it's a two-story home?
You know, preferably we'd like to see one on every level of the home, specifically where people sleep, because it is something that you can't sense. We rely on these detectors to let us know when it's present. You know, we offer one that, is a low level carbon monoxide detector that you can't buy in a store. We actually have to go get certified on carbon monoxide safety, in order to be able to offer it. And it is a high level and low level detector built in one. And because it's got two sensors, it's self-checking. So if there's ever a problem with it, it knows and sends an error code out to you to let you know. So, and it's a, again, with the placement, you know, the plug-in ones, those are real convenient for people, but carbon monoxide is slightly lighter than air and it tends to build up higher up in the space. So where are most of your plugs, right? They're down low. Right. Because that's, you know, so we plug them in down low, but that's not where the concentration is. So typically one that we mount at eye level, where we breathe, where we hang out, mounted on the wall, that's battery operated would be the most ideal.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks for the question. Great question, Julie. Have a wonderful weekend. And we're going to go to Carrie real quick. Carrie has a plumbing question for you, Andy. Good morning, Carrie.
Good morning. I have a question about water hammer.
Okay.
I don't hear it all the time.
Okay.
I don't know what causes it or how to fix it.
So what we see with water hammer a lot of the times is when the water comes into the home, most homes have what's called a pressure-reducing valve, which at that point, when the water comes in, it cannot get back out. And when that valve fails, you introduce high pressure to the home that isn't suitable to be in there. So a lot of the times when we deal with water hammer calls, it's normally like when I flush my toilet and it shuts off, I hear a bang noise in my wall. And that's because that's a mechanical device shutting the water off. So it's going from full flow to no flow very quickly. Unlike when you shut off a faucet, you normally don't just grab the handle and shut it off as fast as you can, which would obviously also cause water hammer. So what it is you most likely have too much pressure in your home and these mechanical devices are trying to shut it off too quickly. And that's like shocking the system. And that shock is the bang in it. That is what you're hearing.
Is there a solution for that?
Yeah. The pressure reducing valve is supposed to hold the water pressure in the home under 75 PSI. And you can normally pick up a gauge at any local hardware store that will thread onto the end of an outside hose faucet. And you want to check your water pressure. And if it's out of tolerance, that's a big deal because that affects everything in the home. Everything within the home that's on that plumbing system has that same exact pressure to it. So you want to check that, make sure you're within tolerance. And then if you're not within tolerance, there's a number of other things it could be. It could be
air in the line.
Yep.
Just turn on all the faucets. What else?
Yep. You could have a failed expansion tank above your water heater. If it's failed and the expansion tank is a bladder where when your water heater kicks on and it's heating the water, that water is expanding. And if it doesn't have anywhere to go, it's building pressure to the system, which just like a pressure reducing valve failing is going to have more pressure to the system than your system should have. Where if it's operating properly, that bladder is flexing within the tank and relieving that pressure. So it could be a failed expansion tank. There's a number of things that could cause water hammer.
And all right, maybe I'll call you later.
Yeah.
All right, well, thank you.
All right, Carrie, have a great weekend. That's always a good question. And I know they have those devices that are the air suppressor or suppressant device at the end. You can like solder it into the line. Does that help?
Yeah, a lot of your washing machine boxes will come with them assembled, pre-assembled into it that way, because your washing machine is, again, another thing that mechanically, when it clicks, especially the high-efficiency washers now, it goes from full pressure to zero in just a flip of a dial.
And you'll hear that thumping.
Yep, yeah, and if you're introducing too high a pressure to that right away, that's a crazy shock to your system when it tries to shut that off.
So, got it, understand. Yep. It's been a fast show, a great morning, and always a pleasure to have you folks in with us from Arlinghouse Heating and Air and Plumbing. Ryan, before we conclude today's show, give us your contact information. And Andy, great stuff with plumbing. We always appreciate it.
Yeah, give us a call, 859-727-9000, arlinghouseair.com, and you can chat with us on our website and reach us on Facebook and Instagram.
All right. Bob and I will see you, talk with you next Saturday on In and Around the House. Have a great weekend.
At Rural First, we're the leader in rural construction loans because we don't work here. We work out here. We live rural, which means we know just what you need to build rural. Our dedicated team of loan specialists works with you throughout the construction process. And with our digital tool, you can manage your project all in one place. That's how Rural First gets you closer to what matters. Rural First is a registered trademark of Farm Credit Mid-America. NMLS 407249. Equal housing lender. Loan subject to approval and eligibility. Other terms and conditions may apply. Visit ruralfirst.com for more details.